Blog Talk Radio.
It's time to strap our boots on. This is the perfect day to die. Wipe the blood out of our eyes. In this life there's no surrender, and there's nothing left for us to do. Find the strength to see this through. We are the ones who will never be broken. With our final breath, we'll fight to the death. We are soldiers, we are soldiers.
Coming to Bard's Logic, political talk, part of the growing conservative conversation, and also part of the Patriot Journalist Network. And you can find the Patriot Journalist Network by going to www.patriotjournalist.com. So definitely check that out. And also see us on tonight with our guest, founder of Make Them Listen, Paul Arnold. Then join me, the host, as well as our panelists, Cindy Todd, James Neighbors, Kelly Mordecai, and Dan Gray. And, of course, when callers call in to the show, you are welcome to stay on the line and join our roundtable discussion. And see on the description here some of the background for the Make Them Listen. But, of course, first, we do have our guest, believe, on the line. So without any further ado, let me bring on our guest, the founder of Make Them Listen, Paul Arnold. And thank you very much, Paul, for calling to the show. How are you?
Pretty good. How are you doing, Robert?
Oh, I'm doing really well. We had a great show this past Saturday when we had some folks from around the country calling in and telling us about their events from the National Day of Protesting against immigration reform, amnesty, and illegal border crossing. And it was a great show, and we're going to talk a little bit more about that tonight. But first, we're going to talk about your organization, Make Them Listen.
Well, thank you, Robert.
So
Make Them Listen. Well, last October, let me back up a little bit. Last summer, I became involved in the D.C. March for Jobs. And that rally was an anti-amnesty rally, and we were opposing the recently passed Senate immigration reform, comprehensive immigration reform, S-744. And so I became involved in that rally. I flew to D.C. and, you know, I helped with their social media on Facebook, and then I flew out the day before and went to the rally. I was very honored to be involved in that rally, and I was just so excited that I was able to help. And so we went to the rally. It was a very special day because Leah Durant, the founder of that rally, the main organizer, she brought in Democrats, Republicans, Tea Party, and people of all colors to that rally. And she brought everybody together for one reason, and that was to oppose amnesty. And it was such a special day, and because it was like, even though all these people, you know, were from different backgrounds and different political ideals, and of course, you know, different colors, and not to sound racist, but there are people from all nationalities, and so we all came together that day, and it felt like the feeling was like we were all one family. It was like a big family there, and nobody, there were no arguments. Everybody got along fine. It was just great. And so I came back from that rally, and it really inspired me. It inspired me to get more involved. And so I created Make Them Listen in October. And what we did is I created an event on Facebook. It was a phone call event for people to call the Republican House reps and oppose the immigration reform. So we posted, we had some folks together, and we came up with a list of the most influential representatives to call. Guys like Paul Ryan, Trey Gowdy, Eric Cantor, we call John Boehner. So we had a list of all those people. We had all their contact information on the page. And so myself and we had a little team of organizers on the Facebook page. And we made calls ourselves, and we posted summaries of those calls. And that was the whole idea, was to lead by example, and to and we knew it would encourage other people to call as well. So anyway, it was a one-day event, and it went so well and became so popular that we went ahead and continued the event indefinitely.
Awesome. And from the beginning, what, you know, purposely did you get involved, you know, become more of an activist, and then specifically an activist about immigration or illegal immigration?
Well, I'm a construction worker here in California, and believe it or not, and most people would believe this, I make less money now than I did 10 years ago. So I became passionate about the issue, and I've been fighting this issue for about 5 years, pretty much full-time on top of supporting my family. So I work a full-time job, and then I work full-time fighting amnesty too.
Well, it's certainly, that's one of the big issues with illegal immigration is, of course, the way it's going to be affecting jobs. You know, we hear the phrase that all those jobs out there that Americans won't take, and we have Dan on the line, and he'll be coming in later, one of our panelists. He's got some firsthand knowledge when it comes to unemployment. I'm sure he'll bring that up tonight, especially when you ask him to bring him the point, and I believe he will, about how that's affecting jobs in America, especially the labor force.
Yeah, we have a huge unemployment problem in our country. And around my area, illegal aliens have taken over the construction trades. I mean, they're everywhere. and the wages have been driven down dramatically over the last 15, 20 years here. And you know, I'm as a stonemason, I was always able to get a job. I could get on the phone and get in the phone book and start calling the contractors, and I'd usually have a job that day if I needed one, you know. And so, you know, I got into doing other things for a living, and, you know, when things weren't going so well, I could always rely on my trade. And when the housing bubble burst, I got on the phone. You know, I needed to make some money. And guess what? Nobody needed me. They all had full crews of illegals, and I couldn't even get a job, Robert.
Wow. What shocked me is I was doing some things related to, you know, my work, and it was around tax time, and I was at one of these, I won't say any names, but there was one of these tax places that knew that the people who they were servicing were illegals. The problem was, is so did the government. You know, they're telling us that, you know they didn't have real Social Security numbers or even real green card numbers or things of that nature, but we're still able to, you know, I guess, get their taxes done and maybe even get refunds, you know, or maybe even get that child earning credit. I didn't do a real deep investigation in it. Perhaps I should have, but as I said, it could have been, you know, a detriment. That's not what I was there for, but boy, it really gave me pause to think that, you know, here they know about it and they're not doing anything about it. Not only are they not doing anything about it, they're encouraging by allowing them to, you know, be able to do their taxes and, as I said, maybe even get those earned income credits for being, you know, of a lower income, and depending on how many children that they have or brought over.
Well, yeah, you're exactly right. And a couple years ago, there was a news station in Georgia, I believe, and they did a three-part series about illegal aliens claiming the child tax credit, and they did a huge investigation. They interviewed illegal aliens who admitted on video that they claimed, like, some of them claimed like 8 dependents who live in Mexico. And
wow.
They were getting refunds for, you know, around, you know, $7,000 to $10,000. And, you know, they don't pay in that much, but these illegal aliens were getting huge refunds. And in part of the series, they interviewed an IRS worker, someone who worked for the IRS. And the thing is these tax returns, when they're sent in, they were written in Spanish. And the person that worked for the IRS said there was a huge problem because they didn't speak Spanish. And so their superiors told them to just approve anything that's in Spanish.
Wow, that's absolutely insane. And that's definitely it's spinning out to insanity. Go ahead.
Yeah, Congress, the House of Representatives introduced a bill to stop that, and it went stagnant and never went anywhere. So the last I heard, the IRS supposedly changed the rules. But, you know, do you believe that? I sure don't.
Well, anything that the IRS does and doesn't do wouldn't surprise me. Of course, we're all familiar with the IRS scandal that happened recently with the Obama administration. Speaking of the Obama administration, when you're out and about at the different rallies this past weekend and could be future ones, there's much talk about, I'm sure there is, what they're saying about how the Obama administration is handling, especially those so-called children that are coming over the borders. Of course, I was listening to CNN as well, and they were trying to, you know, talk about, oh my gosh, don't you care about these children that are coming over, and they're refugees, and they're trying to bring in international law, talk about international law, and that we have to take these children in. What's your thoughts on those two points?
Well, I can tell you, last weekend we had a media frenzy, and believe it or not, the largest newspaper in Mexico called me, and I did an interview with them. And what I told them is that Mexico is responsible for these children coming, traveling here. By not stopping these children at their southern border and not providing humanitarian aid and allowing these children to continue on their journey, they are responsible. I told them straight up, they are responsible for the deaths and the molestings and whatever else happens to these kids on the way to America. And I held them responsible, and I held Obama responsible in that interview.
Well, I tell you what, it's almost like they're just offering them, to come in, giving them, just free reign, just to come into the country. And it's not only that, like here in Ohio, there's like benefits for illegal aliens, such as what we talked about this past Saturday, as we briefly talked about, like here in Ohio, they actually get in-state tuition. I mean, here they're, illegal immigrants, and they're getting, for college, they're getting in-state tuition, where someone who lives here is a citizen of Ohio doesn't get, Ohio, but I mean, someone who, just over from Kentucky would come in, would have to, which is right across the river here where I'm from, pay the same out-of-state fees.
Exactly. That there's in-state tuition, they're granting driver's licenses for illegals.
Right.
California and Florida even passed a law allowing illegal aliens to practice law.
That's just ridiculous.
Yeah, but getting back to the border surge issue and what I was what I told that reporter, The thing is, so Mexico is allowing these children to come in. They're helping them travel north. Meanwhile, the cartels are making money. I think somewhere like $6,000 per person that they smuggle to the United States. So the cartel is making money off of that. And then when the massive influx of people reach the Border Patrol has been inundated, and those Border Patrol agents are being taken away from their patrols and having to process all these people. And what does that do? That leaves a huge hole in our border for cartels to smuggle drugs, across the border. So the cartel's making money off the human smuggling. And then because it's easier now for them to smuggle drugs, they're making money off of that. And what is the end result, Robert? The end result is that by having an open border policy like that and encouraging illegal immigration, it results in more deaths on both sides of the border. We have people in the United States who are, overdosing on these drugs. These drugs are ruining their lives. Violent crime, when you add up all the crime from all those drugs, and then the cartels themselves, it all fuels the cartels, and the end result is more death for the good people in Mexico. And so all it does is add to all this corruption. And what I want to know is, why isn't anybody talking about working on the root of the problem? Encouraging illegal immigration does not fix anything. All it does is continue with the status quo.
Well, one theory is of course, and this is something, I've pushed in the past on the show, and it bears discussion, perhaps not on this episode or the show tonight. But one of the things, have you ever read, first let me do a little cameo, have you ever read Death of the West by Pat Buchanan?
No, I haven't.
Okay, well, one thing he talks about, it's been years since I've read it, but a couple things, but he's talked about in the book, but one, I believe, he talked about is when, you know, the replacement rate of the indigenous population here, you know, in any nation, any empire, but here specifically in the United States, is one of the reasons why the politicians aren't doing anything about this, you know, influx of illegal immigrants coming in, is that our replacement rate is continually shrinking generation by generation. But, you know, of course, simplifying that is, you know, people are having less and less children because it's, you know, becoming more expensive, you know, to have, you know, multiple children. I mean, I know I'm one of seven kids, and my dad's mom had 18 children. I mean, now to have, you know, four children, it's almost unseen, at least in a lot of places. So what's happening is this: the indigenous population continues to decrease, then the overall, of course, population decreases. And so the only way to fill that gap is by allowing immigration, you know, a lot more immigration, and in this case also illegal immigration. But what happens, and this is what Pepe Ken explained, is that what happens, instead of it being a melting pot, what we're happening is we're starting to come under the influence of multiculturalism. And once a nation, or in some instances, used the example of empire, was to start to become more multicultural, where it becomes just pockets of different, you know, cultures and nations throughout the country, the nation loses its self-identity and starts to deteriorate and crumble.
Exactly. You know, it's we used to be a melting pot, but now we're not. We're not melting together. People aren't. They're not. The people coming here aren't assimilating into our way of our society. They're separatists, and they come here and they have their own agenda. And they're not. Many of them, I would say. Well, I can't give a percentage of illegal aliens, but I've met a lot of illegal aliens, and I can tell you they are not patriotic to our country. They don't care. They could care less.
Well, and also through my understanding, I don't know if it rings true, but I know it did just a couple of years ago, where in Mexico, their second largest form of income was folks here in the United States, you know, family members, I guess, here in the United States, bringing it over to Mexico.
Yeah, remittances. Yeah, that's a huge problem. And not only are Americans suffering from a high rate of unemployment, the jobs that these illegals are taking, they're sending a huge chunk of their money home. And so the money doesn't get recycled back into our economy. What it's doing is just sucking America dry. You know, Americans can't find work. And, you know, who pays for all this illegal immigration and the border surge? And we pay for the border patrol. And, you know, when do American citizens, where's the pity for American citizens? That's what I want to know.
Well, there isn't any. And what the, you know, both politicians, first to start with the Democrats and now the Republicans, are, you know, kind of kowtowing to the illegals, because, of course, what they're doing is trying to get more votes, you know, try to get them to vote legally as well. And now they're just pandering to, you know, both parties, as I said, started with the Democrats and the Republicans, are pandering to them for votes because they're becoming a larger percentage of the population.
Yeah, well, the Republican Party is confused, because if they think that illegal aliens are going to vote Republican, they have another thing coming. You know, in California, all you need is a driver's license to be able to vote. So how many illegal, and you know, California passed a law allowing driver's licenses for illegal aliens. So, you know, I'm sure that illegal aliens will be voting.
Right, and then also, well, what the argument is that they say that they come over from Mexico, and Mexico or Mexicans have more of a share more conservative family values, which the Republican Party supposedly espouses, at least more so than the Democrat, at least in theory, and so that's why at least their contention why the illegals would vote for them, or at least Hispanics.
Well, that. I read an article recently, and I can't remember where, but in the article it said that over 80% of new immigrants that come here vote Democrat.
Yeah, but as you said, they need to wake up. And speaking of news, I know I was looking at Oath Keepers' website, and they were talking about Fox News coverage of the events again. And I did find an article that they had, I believe, was it today, on on the 19th, July 19th, Fox News did have an article covering the Saturday, covering the event.
Yeah, wasn't that great? We were thrilled.
Yeah, from my understanding, it took a little bit, but I think as they seen, you know, the numbers throughout the country, I think they decided, well, we should probably go and cover this. Unlike, you know, I don't think they did any, if much coverage of the other events, you know, that was going down in, you know, Washington, D.C., the American, you know, American Spring, but that's a different topic.
Yeah, well, the whole idea behind this nationwide protest, Robert, you know, like I said, I went to the D.C. March for Jobs, and there were a couple thousand people there, and it was all over the news. I mean, people just simply can't afford to travel to a rally like that. They can't afford to take time off work. So the idea was have a nationwide protest, and people can protest anywhere. So suddenly, you know, there's no reason why people can't just go and protest. And that's what, you know, that was what was so great about it, that people could just, you know, we had so many different groups and organizations involved. It really, you know, the news spread fast. We started it, I actually created the page, I think a couple months ago. And, you know, I wasn't sure, like, how it was going to work. And in the last 2 weeks, I swear, Robert, God was with us. I prayed, like, constantly for this thing to work. I would post on my page and ask other people to pray. We got a group of organizers together, and we just started working on it. And within 2 weeks, it was crazy, Robert. All I can say, it was an absolute miracle. Because we pretty much pulled off the impossible.
Well, and we were talking about this Saturday, is, you know, how amazing, you know, with social media as well, you know, getting the word out, things of that nature, how it didn't take a celebrity to, you know, and perhaps one day we'll reach that status, but it didn't take any, you know, like Glenn Beck or anybody of that nature, or, you know, or spending a lot of money, as you pointed out, in order to get the rallies off the ground, but, you know, through Twitter and through Facebook, and through other, you know, social media as well, was able to get the word out and get people to the rallies or to the protest.
Yes, and that was a huge thing for me, that I did not want money involved. And it was just amazing that it just goes to show that that people can accomplish things without money. You don't need money to do things like that. And, you know, all the support from the participating organizations like Overpasses for America and Allopac and 2 Million Bikers to D.C., America Working, and Tea Party groups across the country, the outpouring of support was just, I was completely... I don't even have words to describe how I felt. It was just, I was just feeling so patriotic and so thankful that everybody was willing to come together like that. I'm still kind of reeling from it.
And I was just going to, real quick, how long were you going to be able to stay with us this evening?
I probably should be going pretty soon, maybe in about five more minutes, but I would like to tell a story real quick, if you don't mind.
Certainly, and if I may also, I'd like to bring in James Neighbors from Overpasses America. I'd like to bring him as well, because he's on the line. He's one of the panelists of the show, and I'd also like to bring Dan in. I'm sure they'd like to make it, you know, at least some comments with to you before you have to go, because I wasn't
okay.
Sure exactly how long you could stay, so... if you can do that, and I can bring them in real quick, would that be fun?
Sure.
Okay, great. Go ahead, and then we'll bring in James and Dan.
Okay, well, I wanted to tell your listening on audience, a family, the Jamil Shaw family, they live down in near Los Angeles. In 2008, mm-hmm. their 17-year-old son was murdered by an illegal alien gangbanger. The gang member was released from jail the day before. He had weapons charges. He was convicted of weapons charges, and that was the second time that guy was in jail for that. He was released from jail, and the next day he killed Jamil Shaw, 17-year-old boy. He was the star of the football team, had everything going for him. And so anyway, the Shaw family, they have a radio show on Blog Talk Radio. You can find them if you search for Jamil's Law. Mm-hmm. And so they have this radio show they've been running ever since. And so I go every Sunday, I make it a point to go to their radio show and to participate. Okay. I call in. And so anyway, I've been supporting them and spreading the word for them. Because they introduced a law, a bill to make it so that illegal alien gang members get deported if they're arrested, and which hasn't mm-hmm. gone anywhere, by the way. So anyway, when all the media was calling me, and they were all asking the same thing: where is the largest protest going to be? Well, you know, I knew the Jamil Shaw family, of course, they had their own protest that day. And I knew it wasn't probably going to be a huge rally. But I told the media that, yeah, that's the place. Go there. And so, you know, they've been fighting a long time, and they kind of struggle to get people involved. And so anyway, on Friday and Saturday, the media just, it was a media frenzy at their rally. And it was amazing. And the people from the neighborhood actually came out and joined their rally. And so it really mm-hmm. helped out the Jamil Shaw family. And I'm very touched that they were able to get some attention that they needed.
Well, and speaking of that, I guess it's kind of serendipitous. I'm glad you brought it up. Althea, the mother of Jamil, she called into the show on Saturday.
Go ahead.
Yeah, she called in on Saturday, and we will be actually featuring her and her story next Wednesday on the 30th. I actually had a conversation with her today, and she may, if she gets my email early enough, she may call into the show actually tonight to give us a little synopsis, and I think she was hoping to speak with you a little bit, but I don't know if she's was able to call in yet. I don't see another California area code on the line, but if not, you seem like you speak with her much on her show. But yeah, she'll be here next Wednesday on the 30th on Bard's Logic, telling about her story.
That's great. I love Althea. I truly do.
Yeah, she's definitely went through some tough times. And actually, the guy who got me the contact information, the links to know more about Althea, is our contributor, Dan Gray, which I have on the line now. And we're going to bring him in, Dan. And then James, real quick before Paul has to go, thank you very much, Dan, for calling the show. How are you?
Oh, I'm really glad that I'm actually on the show. We had a massive line of thunderstorms that knocked us off for a bunch of hours, but it came on miraculously. God is in our favor, I think, but I'm not sure about the NSA. Anyway, a couple of points I wanted to make. Paul Arnold, thank you, sir. Make Them Listen is an extremely effective method of reaching across those lines. You were talking about unity, and I've been begging for this, calling for this, writing for this, speaking on this, and it wasn't happening a lot. There was an NSA rally last October in D.C. that managed to get groups as far apart as Fight for the Future and ACLU on the same stage with Freedom Works and Tea Party Patriots, and it's a good thing. But people keep asking about those dead white American males, our founding fathers, and I want to mention to our listeners that we have on the show tonight a founder of Make Them Listen, and that's Paul Arnold, and a founder of Overpasses for America, and that's James Neighbors, who's going to be coming on. And this is the modern American revolution we've got going on here. We're trying to bring things back. It's the exact same fight against tyranny and statism. And I'm pleased that several of the groups that I've been involved with, including 2 Million Bikers and Overpass and Alipac, decided to become part of this particular effort that, that Paul is spearheading. I want to also mention to our listeners that Althea Shaw happens to be the aunt of Jamil. They're black Americans, okay? American blacks. I don't know what to say. I don't like those hyphenated names. Good Americans. This was a good American boy, and I don't mean that in any pejorative sense. He was a boy. He wasn't a grown man yet, who had all the promise of the future taken away from him. Now, there's going to be domestic crime, of course, but do we really, really want to encourage criminals here? The things that, that Paul was saying as far as who we're letting in, we're letting in MS-13 members, one of the nastiest gangs in the world. The Zeta Cartel, which controls northern Mexico, they were trained by our CIA, and these paramilitaries decided they'd make more money on the other side. Paul talked about getting to the root of the problem. Well, the root of the problem is still, as I mentioned, the same fight that we've always had. It's, are we going to be that shining city on a hill doing really, really well because of our liberty and our rights and inspire the world, inspire Mexico and Central America and all other countries to, that want it to fight for their own freedom? Or are we going to be a squalid third world ghetto? I don't think the Democrats, because he mentioned Republicans thinking that they'd get votes. I don't think they care about that. The Democratic Party and the Republican Party, by and large, this is not indicting all members of this party or even all politicians, just most of the politicians. They call themselves progressive. They want progress towards statism, basically. They're not looking for votes. They're looking for maximum profit. Multinational corporations are sending our work overseas. Back in 92 when what the heck's that little guy's name? The one who pretended he was a patriot, and even though he got all his money from government contracts, Ross Perot. He said he was right that there would be a great sucking sound when they passed NAFTA and all the jobs went south, and then they passed GATT and all these other things. It's actually cheaper to bring the slave labor here and make it institutionalized than it is to send it to China or someplace where they basically use political prisoners and people who are living lives little better than slaves. Why do they want to spend all that money on transportation costs when they can just do it right here? I mean, Microsoft, who along with all the other Silicon Valley companies is crying. Bill Gates was before the Congress testifying that crying that they just couldn't get qualified American workers. And the fact is they just laid off 18,000 American workers.
Right.
So you had mentioned earlier, Bob, that I have some information about unemployment. The employment and unemployment stuff, I am an expert. I work at the unemployment office. I'm a senior claims examiner. We have 92.5 million people who allegedly left the workforce in this country, and they didn't leave the workforce. They may be considered discouraged workers, but these are working-age people who have no other sources of income besides government dole, and the reason that they're not working is because small American companies are being wedged out by these large multinationals. But luckily, people don't believe the numbers when they see the results of this in their own lives. Even construction trade unions, traditionally progressive big state government people, are saying this illegal stuff is killing them. And in certain aspects of unemployment, in certain demographics, including construction units unions, we're not even talking inner city or people of color or kids or people over 50, where the numbers are far worse than the general unemployment. Construction workers in this country, they're about 48% unemployment. And this is union and non-union. Unless there's a government contract to rebuild a road or a bridge, That's about it. Nobody's building because there's no money. Why would they build or rebuild? We're not being overthrown by enemies from without. I just want to make that clear. This is not people coming here and destroying us. It's the same thing that happened with Rome and other empires. We're being destroyed from within by internal forces. Paul had mentioned the melting pot. I work with people of all backgrounds, including a Mexican, former Mexican national who is an American citizen who went through all the hoops and is one of the best Americans you could ever meet, who knows the Constitution backwards and forwards and is intimately involved in his local political stuff for the sake of his neighborhood and his kids and their future. And he's a great American. But a lot of the people, as Paul said, who come here illegally, they have no respect. They have no wish to assimilate. They don't want to simply add their unique national character to America and accept what we've already got. I mean, that's what made America great, is we had the best of everything in the entire world. We're getting the worst of everything, and they're keeping themselves separate. Just to wrap up a little bit, because I know Paul's time is short, we want to get James in here. Charity begins at home, but opportunity begins at home too. And I will also note that on social media, which is the connecting point, Facebook and Twitter blow up every time, make them lists and action item. People really respond to this. I haven't had a column in a national newspaper since January when they fired 500 writers along with me, but just retweeting some articles that I've written in general, I'm getting millions of retweets a week as more and more people become aware of this on two major articles. I mean, I've got a lot of them on there, but one is it deals with radical Islam, and the other deals with illegals making America a third world country. This cuts across all boundaries of alleged party affiliation, of your race or your former ethnicity or whatever it is, wherever your folks came from. What this is an American issue where America, all of us standing together, black, white, brown, and yellow Americans, cannot have national sovereignty wiped out, and we can't afford to allow the federal government to and these sanctuary cities to simply fail to adhere to reasonable law. By the way, at unemployment, we use what's called the SAVE system, S-A-V-E. It's a near instantaneous way of verifying legal resident status to, you know, your permission to work. They don't make that available to employers. All the employer gets is an I-9 filled out, which is a simple form that's like one page with you only fill in two or three blanks, and whatever the person who's going there wants to provide them as far as ID. They have no means of verifying it, even though when we use the SAVE system at work, those workers who are trained in using it, literally seconds, they can verify something in seconds and know if it requires further investigation or not. Anyway, so I could go on all night, and that's not a good idea. So back to you, Bob.
That's okay, Dan. We appreciate always your input. So, Paul, if there's anything you'd like to chime in on what Dan had to say, you have the mic.
Well, why don't you bring James in?
Okay, we can do that. Then let's go ahead and bring James in. Thank you very much, James, for calling to the show. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing great. How are you doing tonight?
Oh, doing really well. Thank you very much. It's great to have everyone on.
Well, I got to say this. Hey, Paul, how are you doing?
Good. How are you?
Oh, my gosh. I'm just now starting to wind down after our breakneck run to set the world record for a number of protests across the country in one time.
James, I still have not recovered from that.
No, I haven't either. I haven't been, not talking to you or anything. I know you've been super busy getting caught up on everything. It's just that, man, I've got so many pictures coming in. And, I mean, I had 3 days worth of news articles that I was able to schedule out across on the overpass page just on the protests. So three consecutive days of nothing but news stories that came in across the country. on nothing but these protests from sources that that had never carried us before. I mean, of course, the most entertaining one was one done by NBC Universal, and it was just a pure hack piece. It was really, I didn't post that one. I'm not going to post just a complete, hatchet job about
yeah.
us. And, but, even the ones that, and most of them, well, not most of them, I'd say probably, a third of them were pretty liberal based and whatnot like that, and gave a little more coverage to the counter protesters. But whatever, we expected that to begin with. I was amazed, honestly, that we got so much positive coverage. I kind of expected that there would be a lot more, just generalized BS. And, but luckily, we came out ahead on it as far as the press goes. And that in and of itself is a minor miracle. And, we really, I think, surprised a lot of people with the whole thing. I think we surprised a lot of people with it. I don't think anybody that was watching this, especially the pro-amnesty infiltrators that we had, I don't think any of them started or had any idea just how widespread it was going to be. And, of course, I've had, I think maybe three people, less than a handful, come onto the Overpassage page and say, well, that thing was a flop. The rest of them have been pretty well muted. And the overwhelming support, we were overwhelmingly supported. I mean, even like Dan was saying, labor unions and whatnot like that. They're finally coming around to understanding that these illegal aliens are hitting them in the pocketbook. And I mean, I'm no fan of unions myself. I think they jack wages up too much. But now we've got things is kind of ironic, I suppose, that things are kind of coming full circle, where even their wages, they're unable to employ their laborers because of wage deflation by people that are quite honestly willing to work for less than minimum wage. And because they live in, and this is not a racist statement, and I don't care what anybody says. I've seen it with my own eyes. They pack into a two-bedroom house by the dozens, literally. And I don't even know where they sleep. When I lived in Fayetteville, Arkansas, Fayetteville, Arkansas is kind of a hotbed for that because they have Tyson Foods up there. And if you were to start rounding up illegal aliens, you could round up probably 1,000 in a day just by going into the Tyson food processing plants. And, so it doesn't matter to them if they work for less than what an American will, because they have next to no expenses. I mean, basically, pennies on the dollar for rent because they're splitting it among a couple of dozen people in a four-person house. And, this is a soft invasion of the United States. And every group out there that cares anything about the United States has got to stand together. We absolutely have to stand together and it's stop this, until Washington, D.C. sees that the American people are not going to tolerate this, it's not going to stop. The fact is that companies like Tyson Foods and, a lot of the ranchers, the big ranches out in Arizona that employ thousands of illegal aliens, and the farms there in California. I mean, Nancy Pelosi has even talked about, that they should be given amnesty because they're doing jobs that nobody else will. And we all know that's not true, especially in a time where we've got such rampant, just massive unemployment in this country that's also being falsely stated by the government. you know, it's money, and that's what it boils down to. It all boils down to the Benjamins. And, you know, I know a lot of people talk about some sinister plots about the North American Union, and you know, who knows, maybe that's true. I don't know. I know there's been talk about it. Maybe it's a possibility. You know, who knows? We certainly know that the UN wants to call the shots for everybody in the world. And mm-hmm. so it wouldn't surprise me if there was something, you know, toward that. Well, let's get all of North America united. That's one step closer, you know, toward having a singular world government. And, you know, that type of power invested in so few against so many, you know, we basically would be looking at global tyranny. You know, but what it boils down to is this whole thing, this whole amnesty thing, this whole, you know, standing in supporters are, it has nothing to do with race. It has nothing to do with being hateful to children. You know, the fact of the matter is it has to do with upholding the laws in the United States of America, protecting the sovereignty of the United States of America, and looking out for the American citizens and legal immigrants first. Legal immigrants, because these illegals just spit on all of the effort that, you know, that the illegal aliens spit on the effort of the legal immigrants. Why in the world would a person go through all the hassle to come here legally if they just have to sneak across the border and wait for amnesty? I mean, it's wrong. It's morally wrong what we are doing to the people that work hard for years to become legitimate citizens of the United States. And the best example that we could set for them, and what I mean by, you know, by set an example is to show that we value immigrants, is to deport every last illegal alien and the anchor babies. Anybody with an anchor baby, I mean, that's just an interpretation of the 14th Amendment, and it needs to be returned to where it was prior to the anchor baby laws. And, you know, people say, well, you're going to send somebody that speaks, that doesn't speak any Spanish into a Spanish-speaking country. Well, I'm here to tell you right now, first off, if they're an anchor baby, well, they're going to have family down there that speaks Spanish. Having worked at a McDonald's, that the management team, you know, the head store manager hired mostly illegals, I can assure you that a person that speaks English can pick up Spanish in fairly short order, because in just a matter of weeks, I was able to learn enough Spanish to be able to function as an assistant manager at a McDonald's, speaking a language that before that, the only thing I knew was taco, burrito, and a few curse words. And
I don't even think talk is a Spanish word, but go ahead.
Yeah, and, you know, and so that nonsense about how they'd be helpless in a Spanish-speaking country is nonsense. Spanish is a relatively easy language to learn, and if you're immersed in it, you'll pick it up pretty quickly out of necessity. I look forward to, you know, working with Paul more in the future. And, we hit a few speed bumps in there because this is the first time a coalition of groups has ever come together like that. Anytime you've got something like that going on, you know, there's going to be that break-in period where, you know, you figure out how the other person works, and, you know, you try some methods that, you know, could use some fine-tuning and things like that, and really... the fact that such a large coalition of groups was pulled together and pulled off, you know, world record-setting protests across America, that says it all right there. And, Paul, I'm proud to say that Overpastor America, you know, worked with you, and I'm glad we were able to set up, you know, the bulk of the events across the country so we could make this happen, because it needs to, you know, it happened. It went off in spectacular fashion, and I look forward to doing it again.
That's great, James. I appreciate
that. A little bit, so we want to give you the mic. Go ahead.
I appreciate that, James. I don't know what to say. I'm just still so overwhelmed by it all. I'm literally speechless.
Well, it was a monumental undertaking, and you know, Paul, you know, we're just ordinary men, and we just, you know, we moved a mountain, and you know, that's we did something that nobody else has done before. You know, you and me and everybody else in the coalition, we pulled off something that nobody else has ever managed to pull off in the history of the world, and everybody that was involved in it, you know, needs to feel, you know, very proud for what they did. And, and work on how we could do it again and do it bigger and better in the future. And, you know, we'll talk more about that here soon. Like I said, I'm still, you know, as you are, still recovering from that. I mean, holy cow, we worked hard on that. I mean, it was just, it was more stressful than anything that I think I've ever undertaken, just because of the importance of it. But the important thing is that it was pulled off, and we got it pulled off. And if we got it pulled off once, we could do it better the next time.
Absolutely, James. I wanted to tell a quick story. This elderly woman came on our event page, I believe it was Friday, and she said she was 80 years old, James, and she told us that she was trying to organize a protest in her town, and she was going around town passing out flyers. And I just wanted to say that I was so inspired by that woman. I mean, here she is, an 80-year-old woman, goes out and goes to all that effort. It just shows that, you know, anybody can get out and make things happen. And that's what it's going to take in order for us to take our country back, is that people need to get out. And, you know, a lot of people have reasons why they say they can't. But really, if an 80-year-old woman can go out and pass out flyers and try to get people organized, you know, anybody can do it.
Well, that's it. I mean, you know, good grief. Yeah, I mean, I hope I have as much energy as she did when I'm 80 years old, or does when I'm 80 years old. Maybe all. You know? that's amazing. You know, 80 years old and still willing to, you know, get out there and you know, still out there kicking, not giving up, not surrendering, and that's the key. You know, she's 80 years old and she hasn't surrendered yet, and hopefully we can all say that when we're 80 years old.
Yep. Well, hey, thank you for having me on the show. I need to head out. I have some business to take care of. But, James, it was good talking to you again. And, let's do something. Let's do more.
I look forward to it,
yeah,
Paul, and we'll talk soon.
Okay. And thanks for having me on the show, Robert. I really appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome, Paul. We look forward to having you come on and tell us more about the different events that you guys will be having up.
Sounds great. You take care.
You too. Take care. Good night. And speaking
Thanks.
Of folks working together, and then I'll bring you back in, Dan, as I got an email the other day from the founder of the Oath Keepers. That is Mr. Rhodes. I've been in contact with him, Stuart Rhodes, and he has agreed to come on to the show as well. So we'll be looking for him to come on in the next couple weeks. And again, that is Stuart Rhodes from the Oath Keepers.
Well, that'll be fantastic.
Yeah, I got an email from him. I guess, what's it? I'm looking through my emails now. Just about a day ago, and I invited him to come on to the show, and he said he'll be happy to come on, so we'll probably be looking on him coming in early August.
Excellent.
So we will bring the first, I want to welcome to the chat, let's see, and that is Live Truth Radio. Welcome to listening to the show. Hope you enjoy it. And also, check us out there on all the archives here on Blog Talk Radio. And for those who like to, you can contact me. I'll send you a message later. But we want to bring it, as I said, over to you, Dan. But anyone in the audience who would like to chime in, and, of course, here on Bard's Logic, call in. Of course, as long as you're respectful to our guests and the host and audience, we will leave your mic open. So if you'd like to be a part of the show and join our roundtable discussion, give us a call at 347-945-7428. And if you'd like to chime in, just press the 1 on your number dial, and that will let me know that you'd like to get into the show. And so, Dan, I'll bring the mic back over to you. Thank you.
Thanks, Bob. And thank you again, Paul Arnold, for being our guest this evening. Paul said, and James echoed, that we're just ordinary folks. And actually, we are just ordinary folks. In fact, if you want to call in, you don't just have to listen to a bunch of us bloviating. I'm sure you can do your good job yourselves. In fact, some of our callers have been incredibly eloquent and never even realized how good they sound on radio. Paul had spoken about, and James, learning to replicate this event, basically, to do bigger and better in the future. And I have to say that it's important that we organize and that we rally and we protest and that we work on this this issue of illegal immigration. But the heartwarming thing to me is that people who have different issues of their own hearts are starting to work together. We have people who never worked together before because they didn't see the connection. And now they're uniting against an external enemy, only to find that the enemies are our own so-called leaders. Now, whatever the issue of your heart, that doesn't mean that you can't do something. If you're not the type, for your health, for your business, for the fact that you've got too much going on in your life to get out there and spend a day protesting, that doesn't mean you can't do something. Whatever it is that is that issue of your heart, you have to do something. We are relying on you to do something. The American founders, and we have the founders of all these different organizations who come on this program, and real bold leaders who decide that they're going to step out and risk everything to run for office or to really make a big difference. They're nothing without followers, okay? Mentioning just in brief, because I see that Althea is on the line, and that would be really great to get her on the show. There is no reason why we cannot use the military on the border. The Posse Comitatus Act that prevents the U.S. military from being used within our borders doesn't preclude their use the border facing outward. If somebody fires a 50 caliber round at one of our Border Patrol agents, I would have no problem as president, or which will never happen, sending our troops over the Mexican border to wipe them out, because obviously the Mexican authorities are either colluding or simply not capable of policing their own side. Pelosi was mentioned, quoting her that these are jobs Americans won't do. I work for unemployment folks. There are no jobs Americans won't do. We take claims from people who, for one reason or another, become unemployed from various industries that are supposedly the sole province of illegals, like meatpacking or, you know, chicken factories or places like mushroom farms that we have here in Pennsylvania. And there are Americans, white and black, who have been here in this country for generations, who are working at these jobs, and some of them are doing pretty well, until, of course, they lose their job for whatever reason and they need to apply for unemployment. Remember, Pelosi's also the one who said that we have to pass the bill to know what's in it. And this week,
right,
some appeals courts have shown us that there's some stuff in there that really isn't that good. She's also the one who said this week that we need to treat the illegal children like baby Jesus, which is an incredible emotional and religious appeal by an incredibly emotional and religious hypocrite. Her husband owns vineyards and a winery. She is an elitist. Her father, D'Alessandro, he was a congressman for Maryland's 3rd District. He was mayor of Baltimore. She's royalty. She'll lie to us. I'm not interested in lies. We have plenty of good people. I would personally rather see someone like Paul Arnold or Robert Jetter or any number of other people step up. the way they are. And maybe some of the people that we've had on this show will actually get elected with your help if you think that they are the right people, regardless of what party they adhere to. By the way, Bob, before I turn it back over to you to hopefully bring Althea on, got a conversation going with one of the groups involved with is the Concerned Gun Owners of America, because the Second Amendment is our ultimate for all the other rights. And there's a good chance we may be able to get their national president on the show if you're interested. I'm just doing preliminaries right now, but in the interest of an open and transparent administration, the most open and transparent administration in history, I thought I'd mention that on air.
Yes, certainly. I'd be happy to check him out and have him come on. Looks like we have the next couple weeks or so booked up. And, yeah, let's see what we can get him on.
Very good. So is Althea available?
Okay, well, I want to thank Live Truth Radio for coming in. I see that you got to go. Thank you for visiting the show, and definitely send me that email, and I'd like to connect up with you, and I'll check more out on your show as well. Without any further ado, I will bring in Althea. Thank you very much, Althea, for calling into the show. How are you today?
I'm doing good. Thank you, Robert. How are you doing?
I'm good. Good. Thank you very much.
Great.
So we had Paul Arnold on. He just had to go, and he tells us how you have a show as well to talk about Jamil's Law. So tell us a little bit more about that.
Well, actually, it's I helped my brother Jamil Shaw Sr. when my nephew was murdered in 2008. Jamil's Law started from a candidate who was running for mayor in the city of Los Angeles. He introduced an ordinance that he was supporting called Jamil's Law, which would deport gang members who are in the country illegally. And that pretty much saved my brother's life, because our family, we was really concerned with Jamil, because he had so much anger, understandably, built in. And as days would go on, we found out that that the killer was illegal and that he was in custody, and they let him out. And so we just felt like my brother needed an outlet to let that anger out. So we started Jamil's Law in 2010, and it's every Sunday night. And we picked Sunday nights because you're probably familiar with Terry Anderson. He was in the city of Los Angeles. He passed away, had cancer. And he was on KRLA every Sunday night at 9 o'clock. And his saying was, one of the sayings he would say is, if you're not mad, you're not paying attention. And after he passed away, no one really started anything in that slide. And so we wanted to take that opportunity to have his kind of like legacy in a way. He was on the radio for over 15 years. And we didn't just want it to stop and end and nothing happened. And since we were trying to think what day to have it on, that's why we picked Sunday nights at 9 o'clock in memory of him. So that's kind of how we got into this legal immigration. When my nephew was murdered, we were in Los Angeles, and all the politicians supported us until we found out 2 weeks later that he was in the country illegally. And then it's like we became the problem, and they tried to silence us and tell us don't talk about that he was in the country illegally. And once they couldn't do that, then they tried to smear my nephew. And then once that didn't happen, they just tried to ignore us. So in 2010, I ran for city council for District 10. And I didn't win, of course, but there were six of us. And although we had little money and little to no money and little to no experience, I still came in third, and there were six of us. So we felt like we changed the election, because the incumbent, Herb Wesson, he wasn't even campaigning. He had no intentions of campaigning. He felt like he didn't have to. And once we got into the race, he had to start spending money. And, you know, they were taking our signs, doing different things to sabotage. But we was able to get our message out. And so you know, we kind of like was thrown into all of this because of the murder of my nephew. So that's how we started on this Jamil's Law and illegal immigration movement.
You know, it's funny, Althea, how a lot of people in the black community in America, they were taken in 2008. A lot of people in the white communities and various other communities were taken in because the stuff that President Obama was saying really, it sounded pretty good. I mean, he was talking about an open administration. He was talking about no more foreign adventurism. He was talking about border security and constitutional government. I mean, he talked about fiscal responsibility. Well, he didn't do it. And even though the press would have us believe that the vast majority of black Americans are really, oh, they're still for Obama because he happens to share some DNA, maybe. I don't know. I mean, he's half black. It's not his family didn't come over because of slavery in America, and they didn't have any slaves that came from Kenya because all the slaves that were brought over came from East Africa. But, see, I grew up in America unlike our president. I don't know where he was born, Hawaii, wherever, but I grew up in Philly in a mixed neighborhood, in Bill Cosby's neighborhood. And we had gangs, and they were our neighborhood gangs, which meant we had whites and we had blacks, we had yellows. We didn't really care about that stuff. We went to school together. Things were improving. Some of these families, because my family's immigrants, okay, legal immigrants, and the last one came over in the late 20s from Poland. She learned English. And their families had been in America, in Philadelphia, free Americans as blacks for hundreds of years. I mean, Pennsylvania got rid of slavery a long time before the nation got rid of it, thanks to Ben Franklin, okay? And things were getting better. And now they're trying to divide us. Look, I am not against Mexican people or Guatemalan people or people of any color or ethnicity. I don't really care. Like I said, I work with people. I'm friends with people of every possible background. But the one thing they all have in common, they're really good Americans. They really want liberty. They want to be left alone by the government to do what they want. And the only thing they want the government to do is what it's supposed to do, which is clearly noted in the Constitution. They're supposed to do certain things. And one thing they're supposed to do is enforce the borders. One thing the local and state establishments are supposed to do is not protect us from crime. They can't predict something and protect us. But, you know, it's not protection that thug who murdered your beautiful nephew, okay, who I would be proud if he was my son, okay? That thug, it wouldn't be protection to just say, well, you know what, you might do something. He'd already done stuff. He was a gangbanger. It was proven. He was already on the radar, and they just let him walk. And they wouldn't do that to an American citizen, and they shouldn't. Somebody who's dangerous, they should hold them until they have their fair trial and see where that leads. But,
exactly.
You know, Althea, I'm really proud of your brother for running this organization, and for you for running for office. It's a very brave and dangerous thing to do. You give up an awful lot. People don't step up so many times when they should because they don't want the office to begin with. And I think that should be a prerequisite. If you want to run for office because you want power, you should not be allowed to run for office. But they run for office even though they don't want that because it has to be done. And I will remind everybody out there that even though none of these protests that happened over the last weekend had 100,000 people in one place, it does not take a majority to prevail, but rather an irate, tireless minority keen on setting brush fires of freedom in the minds of men. And that's a quote from one of our founding fathers, a beer maker, Samuel Adams from Boston. And he's right. There are a lot of Democrats in this country.
Of beers. No.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, I'll just finish up real quick so we can turn it back to Althea. There's a lot of Democrats in this country. About half the country allegedly voted for President Obama, although in some of the big cities it's really debatable as to whether there was massive voter fraud going on in targeted districts. But a lot of people did. And even to this day, they still defend this person who is in the president's office. We don't need and will never get 100% of the people or even 75% or 50% of the people to be activists. most of the people who voted are not activists. Most of the people didn't vote. The percentage of people who actively support statism, who understand what it's about, giving government power over people, taking away power from people, not letting individuals run their own lives, having these unelected bureaucrats make regulations with criminal penalties, those are very few. And we may be very few, but I think there's a heck of a lot more of us. 3% is 10 million people, and we already have that. We're going to get more. It's almost an embarrassment, as Gideon said, if anyone reads the Bible in the Old Testament, he was called to do battle for the Lord, for Israel, back in the Bible days. And he had a very small cadre of not really the best trained fighters, and they were up against a really, really nasty group of very, very good warriors. And the angel of the Lord kept telling Gideon, hey, you know, you've got too many guys. Send some home. Let them go home. And the reason was because he wanted to show that the victory was the Lord's. Well, I'm not a religious guy. I'm not going to send anybody home. I'm not going to say that we don't need all of your help. I keep begging all of you, if you're not already doing something, to do something. And if you're not doing whatever you're doing, to do more and bring more people on board. But don't be daunted by the numbers. Here in my area, we had some good rallies over the last weekend. And they had 20 people, 30 people, 80 people. And you look at all the people driving by, and they're just driving by. There must have been 50, 100, 200 times that number on a Sunday or on a Saturday in the middle of nowhere by a place where they're accepting illegal aliens or by an overpass. That's all right.
Yeah, we heard a lot of honks when we had folks over on the show. But we'll get back. But I do want to bring Alfina, and I'll also bring James on as well. And for anyone else who'd like to chime in, I see we only have about 42 minutes left of the live portion of the show. So if you'd like to listen in or chime in, give us a call at 347-945-7428 and then hit the 1 on your number dial. Because at the stroke of midnight Eastern time, you will unfortunately be cut off from listening to or even be able to chime into the extended version of the show. So if you'd like to listen in and chime in, again, give us a call at 347-945-7428. And so, Althea, I'll bring the mic back to you, then I'm going to bring James back in. Go ahead, Althea.
Okay. I really appreciate the things that the gentleman was saying. I don't remember his name, but a lot of the stuff is so true. Dan. Just really on point, and you know, it's a confirmation to a lot of the things he was saying. I know I'm one of the people who did not vote for Obama the first time or the second time, and I would say we were brought up Democrat, not anyone saying you're a Democrat, just almost the environment that you're in, and being brainwashed. I hate to say that word, but in a sense, it's being brainwashed to think it's the white man, quote unquote. That's how, you know, you just were just in the atmosphere and the environment that you're in, that the white man, the Republican, they're out to get us and stuff. And when you brought up the Bible, that's, you know, I read the Bible also, and I would say around 2000, I would say maybe a little after the year 2000, I started really seriously reading the Bible more, and that's truly when I realized I was not a Democrat. And then, so I remember in 2008, even if you tried to talk to a black person, the majority of the black people about Obama, they would shut it down. They didn't want to hear it. They were ready to fight. It was like, it just was crazy. But in 2012, I noticed that you could talk about him in a way that people would say stuff. In agreement, they would feel like, you know, Obama wasn't what he said, but in the way Obama is, everything that he said, they just wasn't listening. But the things he said about immigration, everything, he was up front with it. So, but now you can talk to people and they're like upset and stuff. And I used to ask people like, well, did you vote for him? Well, you know, that's what you get for voting for him. But I realized that, you know, they already feel bad enough for voting for him. So, you know, I stopped doing that. But I do know that once I started reading the Bible, and so, because before my nephew was murdered, real quick, I don't want to hog up the time, but before he was murdered, I was focused on the church. I really felt like the church and the black community failed us by, you know, with the 501c3 and getting in bed with the government and really turning on God in a sense. And so, but the church, the pastors in the church didn't even want to hear it or anything. So, you know, it's almost like when people start reading the Bible, they realize that the Democrat Party 100% goes against the Word of God for people who talk about the Word of God and stuff. So, but anyway, I believe that I wish the GOP would at least just open up an office in Los Angeles, because people are hungry and people are upset with this illegal immigration stuff, and people are speaking out about it. And I know Friday we're having a rally at City Hall. There's another organization, and we're just like four or five groups together, concerned citizens, and we're going to be talking about with Garcetti. Now, he is campaigning for the illegals to come to Los Angeles on top of the illegals that we have with the sanctuary city policy that they created. And so, you know, it's on a radio station, KGLH, in Los Angeles. That's a known station. But the last thing I want to say is that someone had brought up Bill Cosby. I don't know if you know, but Bill Cosby's son was murdered by a legal alien also. And Bill Cosby called my brother when he was murdered and talked to him on the telephone. And Stevie Wonder called us and talked to us on the telephone. Stevie Wonder even offered to give my brother, well, he didn't offer it. He said he wanted to give my brother his Grammy or his Emmy. I can't remember which one. Bill Cosby personally said, I want to take you out to dinner. I want to talk to you, yada this, yada that. Once they found out he was murdered, that Jamil Shaw II was murdered by an illegal alien gangbanger, they literally abandoned us. It was as if we were the problem and stuff. So, you know, you get angry about it, like, yeah, you know, like the scripture says, be angry and sin not. So we're trying to use the anger in a good way. That's why we have the radio show, to direct my brother's anger. And then the last final thing I'm going to say is that the overpass, we're going to start having the overpass rally on Friday. That started with Paul Arnold and William Gaines event and the other people who planned the national protest against immigration reform, amnesty, and border surge. When we were at that, the police came out. And first they lied and said that we were drinking and smoking, which was just one big lie. But it ended with the lady saying, okay, so what time are you guys leaving? It was three police officers and two men and one female. And she spoke up and said, what time are you guys leaving? And so we told her we're going to leave at 7 o'clock. And she said, okay, well, that's it. So after that, that's it. And the way she said it was like, okay, then we could be through with you guys. And so we said, well, then we're going to be here Saturday also because of the two-day event that we told her about. And then we said we're going to be there between 1 to 4. And the officer said, okay, so after that, that's it. Are you guys through? That's it? And I said, well, then we're going to be here every Friday. So that's kind of how that just started, because I just felt like they were putting us in a corner, like now we can't even stand on the bridge and hold signs and hold the flag. So anyway, so every Friday, starting this Friday, we're going to be at the overpass. And that was the overpass that Jamil Shaw had walked past right before he was executed. And so we're going to be there from 1 to 4 and going to join the overpass protest that's already going on. And so, of course, I can go on and on and on, but I'm going to stop right there. And thank you for giving me the opportunity to ramble on.
We love to listen to you.
Oh, that's
a good.
We appreciate it.
You know your stuff.
Of course, we'll hear more on it next Wednesday when you come on for the full show.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. Look forward to it.
Oh, you're welcome. And let's go ahead real quick, Dan, and bring James in, and then we'll bring it back over to you. Go ahead, James.
Well, I heard that was on that same overpass that happened, you know, just right after we had set it up. And, you know, it's I'm not even sure how to put it into words, really, what I'm feeling. And honestly, I can't express enough about you know, just how much I feel for your loss. It's always a tragedy when something like that happens, and there's really nothing that can make up for it, or bring that loved one back. All we can do is, you know, try to honor their memory as best we can, and I could see you're doing that. We've got a serious problem in this country, and what happened to him was, it was really just a symptom of that problem. And, if we want this nation to be one that we want our children to grow up in, you know, we've got to take this country back. You know, we absolutely do. America has, long since been known as the beacon of freedom throughout the world. And it's up to us to make sure that it remains that way. And our founding fathers warned us many times, that we would have to be diligent. And, the price of freedom is eternal vigilance. And, Benjamin Franklin, once said that, I believe this is correct, but said, you have a republic, now can you keep it? It was, that may be paraphrased, nevertheless, I think everybody gets the idea. I just hope, really, that these protests that we had across the country emboldened and gave courage to enough people that they'll speak out and they'll demand that the people that control, that are in power in this country do something for the benefit of Americans. And, for many of them, the first time in their careers, I don't expect Harry Reid or Nancy Pelosi or Dianne Feinstein and so many, Dick Durbin, and Danny Davis. I could go on and on. I don't expect them to do anything in the benefit of the country because they're hardcore progressives, and I don't think they'll ever wake up. But there are enough people up there in D.C. that I think can be swayed by their voters to come out in enough numbers to counter them and to get this nation steered back on course, of course. But we have got to get these career politicians out of office. That's the big source of the problem. The longer you're up there, the more favors you owe to big money and to, you just end up with a whole chest full of favors that you have to pay back. And at that point, you're compromised and you're no longer a statesman. That's when you become a politician. And our nation doesn't need politicians. It needs statesmen. And, I hope you did say that you were running for office as well.
I said that I ran for 2010, but I am going to again, even though I haven't officially, we have until October, but I made up my mind I am going to again. The election is March 3rd, 2015, which is a day after my nephew was murdered. And so I'm going to learn from the mistakes that I know I made, and, yes, I am going to run again. Every time they come to District 10, we're going to run until we get in.
Well, I'll tell you what, get a hold of Michelle there in California. She's the California state leader. She's very active in the governor's campaign right now. And I quite imagine she would be delighted to rally the overpasses people to give you some free advertisement out there on the overpasses. And, a lot of people have claimed that we filed as a 501c3. Which, of course, prohibits us from supporting any candidates, and that's not the case. We filed as a 527. That does come with some negatives, if you want to call it that, where anybody that that should choose to donate to us no longer gets a tax deduction, or they don't get a tax deduction for anything they donate. But it also lets us preserve all of our rights just as citizens, where we have full free speech, we can endorse candidates, we can speak out against candidates. And, you know, that was done intentionally. It's just, you know, these organizations out there that file for 501c3, they did it for the money. And that's not what Overpass is about. And you know, get with, if you're not in our California group, if you're on Facebook, you know, please join it. And,
okay.
You know, Michelle is the state leader there, and Shirley is her tireless assistant there, their co-leader. And, you know, let's see what we can do. 2015 is not very far around the corner. And especially when you're talking about campaigning. And so let's see what we can do about getting you some free advertising, some good old homegrown grassroots campaigning out there for you. And maybe we can surprise them in your district, just like Dave Bratt did against Eric Cantor. A lot of the Overpasses members out there in Virginia worked tirelessly, many, many hours, and spent many days out on street corners in cities across Virginia campaigning for Dave Bratt. They weren't getting paid. They weren't getting paid a dime. They were doing it because they believed in him. And well, guess what? He surprised the entire GOP establishment by defeating Eric Cantor. Now, he's got one more hurdle, and that's to defeat his liberal opponent here in November. But if he could beat Cantor, he can beat that liberal. And, you know, I'd like to think we can pull off the same for you. So get in touch with them, and let's see what we can do together.
I will. Thank you so much. Thank you. I'll definitely take you up on that. I'll reach out to her.
Yeah, definitely keep us posted. We'll keep in touch, too.
Great.
Well, Dan, I heard you back there. I'd like to go ahead and bring you back in.
Oh, thank you. You know, obviously I love to talk, but it's a pleasure listening to guests like this. I can see why your show is growing, why more and more people who are very serious about the intellectual and the emotional debate that America is having will tune in. Even though it's just on Blog Talk Radio at present, although hopefully in future maybe you'll have a whole, you know, a network, Robert. That would be awesome. Maybe I'm just dreaming
that.
Back to reality, those people who say that we cannot bring the military to bear, I had mentioned the Posse Comitatus Act, and there was a historical precedent quite recently. In 1954, May of 1954, the Department of Immigration and Naturalization Service, that was under Joseph Swing at the time, and a fellow named Brownell, who was the Attorney General, implemented orders that were legal orders by President Eisenhower we wouldn't use the name today because it really is a little distasteful. I'm not concerned about offending people, but there's really no point in doing it deliberately. It was called Operation Wetback. During World War II, we had a real lack of laborers in this country. That's why a lot of women stepped into the factories, as they should, and why a lot of Mexicans and people from Central America came north to work. And it was fine. It was good. We needed them. They needed us. And Mexico was producing war material and agricultural goods. So it was a net positive to all involved. And after the war, there remained two avenues for legal immigration that were proper from that area of the world. And one was the guest migrant worker program because, quite frankly, our economy was doing well enough that there were jobs Americans didn't need to take. They could do better elsewhere. So we needed workers to do things like picking fruits, and which is a labor-intensive thing. And I'm not commenting on whether they were treated well. They definitely should be treated properly with respect and paid a living wage. But they came here. And the other way was we always had legal immigration where people went through all of the procedures and hoops to become legal Americans because they wanted to be Americans. And we welcome them as well. But we had an awful lot of people who were just coming here because America was booming. And they wanted to make some money, and they really weren't concerned about obeying the law in any regard. They're not all bad people. They weren't all criminals, but there were too many of them. And under what was called Operation Wetback, They used various legal techniques without any kind of, coercion of a police state or anything like that. They didn't round people up in camps. They rounded people up, and if they were not legal Americans, they shipped them back. And this was somewhere about 5 or 6 million people in a fairly short period of time. I'm not saying we need to do that right now. If we used the SAVE system, if we used what the federal government already has, if we obey the laws that we already have, which could be improved, okay, I'm not saying they couldn't, but reform of immigration does not mean we're going to let everybody in, give them de facto amnesty, then we might put up a border. No, it means you close the border, and you make it so they can't work here unless they're legally entitled to work here, and they'll self-deport. There's no reason for them to stay if they can't make money. If they're interested in being Americans, they have to self-deport, otherwise allowed to come in later. Of course, you're like the Obama administration. This is a report from the Daily Caller. Using his phone and his pen, our feckless leader has decided on his own without congressional approval. There's no law that says he can do this, but he's issuing two new immigration law. Asylum seekers and refugees who provided, quote, limited material support to terrorists. But if it's believed by Homeland Security and the State Department that they don't pose a threat to the United States, which apparently the thug who murdered Jamil Shaw didn't pose a threat, which is why they let him go, even though he was a pretty threatening character, they're going to say, guess what, we're going to allow these exemptions to narrow the ban in the Immigration and Nationality Act that excludes refugees and asylum seekers who have had given material support to terrorists to say, you know what, mm-hmm. Okay, all right, look, you built them a bomb, but we don't think you're going to build a bomb here because we don't want to think that. Okay, you brought them into your home, you fed them, you clothed them, you put them on your way, and while you were at it, you strapped a bomb vest to your own kid. Hey, this is America. We'll give you another chance. Look, I'm all for second chances. I believe that people can be redeemed, but I don't believe that we need to be allowing somebody to simply make law based on their own set of beliefs. That's why we have a constitution. James was using a number of titles, and really names do matter. That's why I wouldn't call anything Operation Wetback. That's distasteful. I don't hate Mexican people, all right? He talked about liberals. He talked about progressives. An honest liberal is not somebody I have to worry about. They just want liberty, and they want to move. An honest progressive is not somebody I have to worry about. They're somebody who just wants to move the society forward, try and do more things. But statists, I think that's the suggested term I would like everyone to start using if they could, if they agree with me. A statist is someone who believes that the state should have power. You can call them fascists if you want, but statist is a nice new term that people haven't used, and you can't really confuse it with Soviets or communists or Nazis and say, oh, look, you're calling them Nazis. You brought up the Hitler card.
Mm-hmm.
No, they're in favor of the state taking over things that the family should be doing, that the individual should be doing.
Right.
And to protect us from ourselves, they're going to intrude on our lives. I want people to remember that every single person in government is a person. They're just as weak as we are. Now, I believe in redemption, but James mentioned that we need statesmen to combat these statists. How does corruption happen? Why do these good ones go bad? Partly it is a function of time, but I've seen this over and again, so I'll give you a brief capsule description of how someone good goes bad and then turn it back over to you, Bob. You get somebody. Let's say that they're not a crook and they're not a statist and they're not a crony. They really honestly want to make a difference in a positive way. They actually believe. And they take that bold step of putting themselves in the public arena, which is a very nasty place to be, and they get elected. Now, they get elected and they're told, look, we're not going to have anything to do with you unless you work with us. We're not asking you to compromise your beliefs. We're not asking you to vote 100% lock, stock, and barrel with us. But you want certain things. We want certain things. It's called compromise. And that all sounds pretty reasonable, except for what you're compromising on. So you go along, and they don't offer you anything that's particularly against your own views, your values, your conscience, just little things that you can go, yeah, I can compromise on that. That's just a difference of point of view. That's a difference of where we put the money or how we, you know, set up this program. It's okay. It's still not bad. And you start to move ahead, and you've got a committee position, and you've got a little tenure, and you've got a nice office, and you're getting some staff, and something big and important comes up that you really, really want. And your name is on it. And this is something that is in your heart. And you've been fighting for this since long before you became a politician. And they tell you that they will support you. But you've got to go to bat for them. And they give you something that's a little stinky, something a little distasteful, something that goes against your conscience a little bit. Not much. It's kind of like a cop on the beat taking a free cup of coffee, showing up at the coffee shop. That's not so bad. Now he takes a donut. Now it's a meal. Now it's a meal for him and his family. Now it's a meal for him and his family plus a bag with $50 in it. And the next thing you know, you've got somebody who is no longer a police officer, who's no longer a public servant, but somebody who rips off the public. And that doesn't happen just in the police department or in politics. It happens in medicine. It happens in teaching. It happens in the church. We see this over and again where somebody who may have started off with the right view is slowly, slowly corrupted. Now, here's the kicker. People ask you, well, how can they get that way? Don't they realize? And the answer is no. The same reason why everybody you know, including yourself, will defend their belief, even in the face of stuff that tells you that it's not true, is because we've come to this belief, we really want it to be true, we don't want to hear anything to the opposite. So when we make just a little more, we keep telling ourselves that what we're doing is something that's worth it, that we're going to get to the place we need to be to make those major changes. And what we fail to realize is that every single one of those corrodes and corrupts our hearts. And bit by bit, we no longer are that person who originally got into office. And by the time you get that committee chairmanship, by the time that you are a three-time incumbent, by the time that your name recognition is high and your positives and everybody likes you, and you all you have to do is say, I'm thinking of running, and people start sending you checks, by that point, for most people, it's too late, and you don't even realize. Very few people come to the realization that they've actually sold out when they've sold out. So the key, if you're not Ron Paul, if you're not Dennis Kucinich, different viewpoints, both of them honest men, if you're not George Washington or Mother Teresa, and Lord knows how few of us are, the key is when you start to compromise, get out. When you start, get out. Don't feel that the entire movement, the entire issue is dependent on you alone. There are people who came before me. There are people working alongside me. There are people in front of me who have yet to step up. Every single one of us is important, and not one of us is irreplaceable. I'm not saying that we're not individual, we're not unique, we're not important. What I'm saying is that if you can't keep yourself straight, if you get to a point where it starts to go, that's the time for you to go. And don't, you know, when you don't, you make it harder on all the rest of us. So for God's sakes, folks, those of you who have power, whether it's in big corporations or in any of the institutions of government or any of the institutions of America that have been corrupted, if you're in a position where you've been in a while and you're not really doing what you're supposed to do, either you have a coming to Jesus moment, and I'm not a Christian, I'm just using the phrase, or you're a bigger part of the problem, and you're exactly the opposite of that young man or woman that you once were, and you should be ashamed of yourself. So, anyway, back to you.
All righty. And I see we only have about 15 minutes left of live time, folks. And I do see some folks on the line, including Holly, who I'll be bringing you in shortly. Just push the 1 on your number dial if you'd like to chime in. Or if you'd like to listen to the extended version, go ahead and call us at 347-945-7428. And just push the 1 on your number dial to let me know you'd like to get in. And that is 347-945-7428. So what we'll do here is we'll bring in Holly, and then we'll see if Althea has any comments she'd like to make, and then we'll bring it to you, James, and we'll go from there. But, of course, we do have some other folks you'd like to call in and chime in. We'll get them in as well. So without any further ado, I will be opening up your mic. Holly, thank you very much for calling to the show. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you, and thanks for having me again. I
oh,
had a
anytime.
Question for James, if he's still on.
Sure.
I see him. There he is.
Hi, James. Yeah, this is Holly Norris out here in Oklahoma. I held the hosted the Glenpool Rally. My question is, there was an event posted today, and you're one of the hosts. It says from August 2nd to October 25th, national protest against illegal immigration and amnesty. And I wondered if you could collaborate on that. And also, when you're done, I may have another question for you. And because I'm trying to help the 2 million bikers of D.C. also.
Well, what's going on with that is we're coming up on the primaries. And was that actually posted? Well, actually, my question is, was that posted in the Oklahoma group? I've been real busy all day.
No, I believe it was the national page for the against illegal immigration and amnesty.
Yeah, that's the press release. We're working with Alipac and Make Them Listen and that entire coalition. What we're basically doing is we're warming everybody up. August 2nd in 3 different states, that's Tennessee, Michigan, and Washington State. We've got a cabal of rhinos running, Lamar Alexander being the most prominently named one. And we're trying to get out, and what we're going to do is go protest outside their headquarters, and which are fortunately all on busy streets right in the middle of town. And we're going to get out and protest against them, against amnesty. And, hopefully we can show them that their voters do not want amnesty. And, worst case scenario, or best case, worst case scenario, they win their elections, and continue on their way. But what we're hoping will happen is even if they win and they continue in office, they'll see right up in front, they'll be getting phone calls from their headquarters because we know they won't be there. They'll be off on vacation or doing something in D.C. That they'll be getting words from their campaign and their headquarters and their offices that there's a large number of protesters out there that are very angry about amnesty, and that'll get back to them. And that's the point. We're trying to send them a message that we, the people, do not want people that are not we the people to be granted citizenship in this country and making a mockery of everything that it is to be American. And, and so that's the point of that. That's August 2nd. Then August 9th, I believe we've got something going on in Florida as well. I believe Rubio's offices are where we're going to be outside of, and I'd have to check that to see if there was anything else. But again, the point is to send a very clear and distinct message that amnesty is not an option, and that we do not want that as an American people, and we do not want immigration reform with this current Congress, because that will just lead to amnesty. There's no doubt about that with the current makeup of it. The only immigration reform that I would say needs to be done right now is we need to send the military to the border, and every illegal we round up needs to be put at work building a wall, not a fence. I'm talking a wall. I wanted to make the Great Wall of China look like an amateur job. and then as soon as they're finished, we can just toss them over the other side and say, good luck, go home. And now that you've got some good construction skills, you can go back to your home nation and set about rebuilding that. And, you know, by the way, you guys need to have a 1776 moment in your own country, not ours. And, you know, that's what they're for, is to put the pressure directly right in the face of these pro-amnesty rhinos and to tell them that we the people are none too pleased with their stances on this immigration and amnesty issue. And, you know, like I said, even if they win, hopefully the message will sink in and they'll change their tune. We already know that Marco Rubio can tend to waffle back and forth because, you know, he was in the gang of, was it 7 or 8? Anyway, he co-authored the amnesty bill, and then once it was finished, he backed away from it very quickly. You know, he still talks about some pathway to citizenship, but we've already seen that he can be swayed. And so hopefully we can continue steering him back, you know, if he wins, hopefully we can steer him back to the, you know, to being the Tea Party type candidate that he was elected as. And, you know, his, the Tea Party groups down there in Florida are furious with him. And whether he wins or not, you know, I'm not sure how he's sitting in the polls, but we know that he's got the GOP's bank, you know, backing him. As for Lamar Alexander, his opponent, who I'm terrible with names, I don't remember, but I do know that his opponent is gaining very rapidly in the polls, much like Dave Brat did. And I wish there was apparently a little bit of miscommunication with our Tennessee leader, but, you know, hopefully we've been able to get that remedied in time to make a difference. He didn't understand that we could campaign for candidates, or that we could endorse candidates. And once he found that out, he was absolutely thrilled. And he's mobilized people of Tennessee to get out there and you know, stump for that guy to hopefully beat Lamar Alexander, you know, who's already on the ropes without any free advertising by people that support him. And so here's to hoping that they can take it to the next step. And, you know, if we can defeat Lamar Alexander and we can defeat Eric Cantor, that will send a very clear and concise message to the establishment Republicans, the Rhino establishment, that business as usual is over. And that's the message that we're trying to send to them. And then here on October 24th and 25th, like I was saying earlier when Paul was here, we're ramping up to do another massive wave, and we're trying, you know, the whole goal is to get people to go out and vote that do not support amnesty. You know, I was never a Romney fan. I'm still no Romney fan. You know, when they started running, you know, my whole thing was anybody but Romney or Obama. And unfortunately, we were left with the choice of, I still see as the lesser of two evils. And, you know, I voted for Romney just because, you know, come on, Obama, I would sooner move to Mexico than vote for Obama. And,
hey, well, that was kind of my next question was, when the next national wave against illegal immigration and amnesty will be, as I'm trying to help. Of course, I'll set up a rally, you know, with the overpasses throughout our state of Oklahoma, but also for the 2 million bikers D.C. of Oklahoma chapter. When would that next national wave against illegal immigration and amnesty be? Is that going to be on the 9th?
No, well, that's, yeah, on the 9th. Now, you know, for until the 24th and the 25th, overpasses is going to kind of be going a little bit alone on that as the coalition gets everything organized.
Okay.
And, you know, so, but that's nothing, that's no big deal. That's certainly nothing that we haven't been doing for over a year now. And so certainly nothing I'm afraid of. But, no, the amnesty issue is not coming off of the table because it's a clear and present danger. especially with this border surge, to the solvency and the security of the United States. And, you know, we have no intention whatsoever of dropping it at all until it's resolved in favor of the American people here and the American citizens and legal immigrants. It will not be dropped. And we will, what he's doing with the border right now is, in my eyes, and I think the eyes of millions of others, an impeachable offense. At the very least, it's a dereliction of duty and a violation of his oath of office. And, you know, quite a number of people have been quite blunt and said they believe it's treason because he's intentionally allowing a soft invasion of the United States of America to bring about its demise. And, I view this, and I believe I speak for everybody, in the movement, that stood up with us, that the entire border fiasco and the way he's done this is an impeachable offense, and we're treating it as such.
So the next national wave against illegal immigration amnesty has not been set yet.
Well, for overpasses will be the 9th.
Okay. And that's going to be national wave?
Correct. Now, if you know any veterans groups that are getting out, Wednesday the 6th, we'll be dedicating that to, Wednesday, August the 6th, we'll be dedicating that to Extortion 17, yet another one of the many tragic crimes of the Obama administration when they were assassinated by the Taliban because of information given to them by the Obama administration. And, you know, it's actually 1 year to the day of our very first, Patriot Wave. And I had never even heard of Extortion 17 when we planned the date. And then some people that knew of it, I believe it was a member of the Vaughn family, actually contacted me and said, you understand that's the anniversary of Extortion 17. I'm like, what's Extortion 17? I mean, I knew about a lot of the other things that Obama had done, but I'd never even heard of that. And
the 6th is the anniversary of that?
Yeah, it's the third anniversary.
I'm sorry for interrupting Holly and James, but I do have to let the folks know that there's less than 3 minutes left of the live portion of the show. And we will be going into our extended period. However, if you do not call at 347-945-7428, you will be cut off from the audio. It will not be able to listen to the extended portion of the show. However, you will be able to listen to all of the show in its entirety in the archive. But if you'd like to listen or chime in to the extended portion with us, give us a call at 347-945-7428, and you have to do that within the next 2 minutes. If not, we'll be cut off. You'll be cut off in mid-sentence because this will be the last time that I'll interrupt folks before we go into the extended portion of the show. Again, it's 347-945-7428. Sorry, folks. Go ahead, James and Holly.
Oh, I was just trying to narrow down the next national wave. So it's just going to be overpass event, and the next national wave against illegal immigration and amnesty will be August the 9th.
Correct.
Okay, that's all I was kind of trying to get at, so I can help set up some things there. So I guess my questions are all answered, and you guys can go on.
Well, of course.
And also congratulations.
You know, Holly, keep your mic open.
Yeah, big, huge congratulations on this last wave, James, and everybody involved, everybody that, all 50 states, over 300 rallies. Just thank you, and God bless, and congratulations on the success of it. Really great. And I'm done.
Well, thank you. I would like to mention something. For the first time ever, the Oath Keepers joined us, and 2 million bikers from D.C. actually showed up in force down there in Lawton. They brought about 30 different bikers from around the state of Oklahoma. I believe the majority of them came from Ada, and that was a lot of fun.
Actually, some came from as far away as Collinsville, Oklahoma, Tulsa, Oklahoma, Okmulgee, Oklahoma, Ada, Seminole. Yes, sir. They sure showed up.
Yeah, I didn't want to forget them because that was a lot of fun. Those guys are some really great guys, and I also don't want to forget William Gein, the president of Alipac, because if it weren't for the contacts that he knew, we wouldn't have gotten the media coverage. We wouldn't have gotten anywhere near the media coverage. The coalition wouldn't have come together because a large portion of the people that joined us out there that were from outside overpasses, aside from Make Them Listen and 2 Million Bikers, the Oath Keepers came along because of him and over 50 other groups. And so I don't want to leave William Gein and Alipac out of the loop on that, because they deserve a great deal of credit for making this happen and bringing so many people together. And you know, we're already working on that. Of course, as you saw that notice on the upcoming dates came from Alipac. And William's an extraordinarily organized individual. I wish I had half his skill.
yeah, right.
if it weren't for William, it was just an incredible coalition that came together, and everybody, you know, Paul, William, the 2 Million Bikers, the Oath Keepers, Working Americans, I believe it was called. I mean, it was just a huge list of groups. We made history, and we got their attention. As Paul's group is called, Make Them Listen, we made them listen.
Yes.
And you know, they understand now that not just in some amorphous, anonymous protest in D.C., of people, who knows where they're from? Who knows where they're from? You don't know where they're from. You can't tell. It's just a crowd in D.C. But they now know that from sea to shining sea, from Mexico to Canada, the American people are very unhappy with the status quo, and we made them listen.
Because all the different groups may have all their different issues, that we all came together on this particular issue, and to me, it's a national security issue. It absolutely is. We don't know who these people are that's coming over the border, and I noticed the opposing protesters that came out just want to say they're little children. That's all they are. Well, that's not all they are, and we don't know who they are. So... And I'm glad to hear Texas Governor Perry was sending National Guard down to the border, talking about status and statesmen and whatnot. And so we are making a difference, and I'm just really thankful for that. And I, for one, this VA scandal, I know quite a few veterans and even in my family that's just had so much trouble with the VA hospitals and this, that, and the other, and yet we're housing in our great state of Oklahoma, the illegals on Fort Sill, but yet our veterans can't get the help they need, but yet we're going to help.
Mm-hmm.
I don't, where I'm coming from, and like, vets
right
before illegals, hello, not to mention that they are illegal anyway, so... I'll get off my soapbox. You guys go ahead.
No, by all means. You're preaching to the choir, but carry on.
Yeah, well.
But I just want to let folks say that I did get a message from Althea, and she had to go, and she said, thanks, everyone, for tonight, and she's looking forward to talk with everyone next Wednesday on the show, so she enjoyed speaking with everyone tonight, but she had to go. So thank you, Althea, for coming on to the show, and we look forward to next week. So I'm going to go ahead, and we do have some callers on, but if you'd like, I know you're listening in, but if you'd like to chime in, just push the 1 on your number dial to let me know you'd like to chime in as well. And so this time I'm going to bring it back to you, Dan.
Hi. Great to listen to Holly. Hi, Holly.
And
the fellow who is running against Lamar Alexander, by the way, is named Joe Carr. And Laura Ingraham and Sarah Palin just recently have decided to, Sarah Palin recently have decided to endorse him. I'm not allowed to say partisan political stuff like vote for this guy or don't vote for that guy. I would just urge anybody who is in Tennessee to take a look at Lamar Alexander's record. Forget that you know his name and that you know his face and he seems like a nice fella. Look at what he's actually voted for and what he's promoted and how things have gone for Tennessee and for the rest of the country under his very, very, very long career as your employee on your dime. You're paying for him. And ask, is this a really good employee? You don't have to hate the fella to say, you know, his work performance just isn't adequate. Who else have we got online? Then look at the other fella and what he stands for and what he's about and make up your own mind. I wouldn't go on endorsements, and I wouldn't go based on what somebody says alone, no matter who it is. And quite frankly, there's very, very few who are worth keeping right now. I would say, and I'm estimating here, maybe 7% of the people who are in office, and this isn't just nationally, but across the board, your local municipality, township, borough, city, the state offices that you vote for, really, we didn't do our jobs, as James mentioned. We weren't diligent. Instead of voting out the incumbent occasionally, we just give them a 99% pass and say it's not worth our trouble. Folks, we caused this responsibility. I don't blame a thief for stealing from me. If I walked down the road at 3 o'clock in the morning in a bad neighborhood with a $100 bill sticking out my pocket, it's the thief's fault. But I kind of put myself in a bad position. If I am going to leave my lights on and my television, my big screen, which I don't have. I don't have a big screen TV. I don't have any of that good stuff because I don't have any money, but that's fine. If I'm going to leave that in the front hall, lit up, turned on, leave the front door wide open, drive away, make sure there's no cars there, and, you know, put a notice in the newspaper. Gee, if you're looking for stuff, please don't come to my house, even though I won't be home and I have a lot of good stuff. That's what we did. We're stupid. All right. When they say the American people are stupid, they're right. Not the individuals. Every individual I talk to has got a native intelligence. They may or may not have book learning, but they're not dummies. They manage their lives. Okay. Most people are pretty good at that. But individually doesn't work unless we get together in groups. And you got to pick your group. But what's nice is that all these different groups who have different viewpoints are actually working the same viewpoint for the anti-immigration movement. The frog got a galvanic shock. It's boiled. It's jumping out of the pot. I'm hoping the next step is going to be that the same sort of thing happens. It's already happening on the anti-NSA and the pro-internet freedom front. And it's happening to some extent. Surprisingly, there are quite a few Democrats and liberals and libertarians who are very pro Second Amendment, and you know, they're saying we don't care if these folks over here have exactly the same viewpoint about us on everything, on this very important thing, this crucial thing. They share our viewpoint. We're going to work with them. So that's got to happen more and more, and it is happening. And the next step, which is what I'm anticipating and I'm praying for and I'm working for and I'm suggesting to all of you, because every one of you can do something about this. Some of you are very influential. You don't even know it. Is for these interest organizations, this group of all these organizations, for instance, that are working together with James and with Paul Arnold to stem illegal immigration. It's all these different groups. Now let's see that all these different groups who have an overlap working with a whole bunch of other groups who aren't working on illegal immigration. They may be working on, you know, Second Amendment issues or anti-Common Core issues. I can't predict what's going to catch fire, but start working with them. And it becomes a national movement where there's a whole list of basic tenets. You know, folks, whatever the issue of your heart is, if you look closely enough, scratch beneath the surface, you'll be very, very surprised to find out it's really the same issue as what your neighbors and your friends are fighting, even though it doesn't look the same. Illegal immigration, Common Core, Second Amendment, NSA, the IRS, the Obamacare, all of these things and more come down to a constitutional issue. They come down to our rights belong to us. I believe it's from God. If you don't believe that, at least you can acknowledge that they're self-evident natural rights. They're ours. We're born with them. And that government's sole role is to do certain things, only those things, really well to protect those rights and to leave everything else up to us. And that is a recipe for success. And the recipe to get that recipe for success is to work together, to stop and I've noticed this has been happening. James said, Paul said that he noticed it was very few people who really criticized the events. Even the trolls and the paid provocateurs aren't really doing much of that. How can they criticize something that's so self-evidently successful?
Exactly.
This is really important. We were shooting ourselves in the foot left and right on all kinds of issues. You know, oh, his issue, you know, it's not quite as important as mine. Well, you know, he's not doing it as well as he could. You know, I would have done it better or different. Legitimate concerns are one thing. Constructive criticism is welcome. Personally, I mess up all the time, and people tell me about it, and I put aside that momentary feeling of, what do they know? And I think about, are they right? And if they're right, and more often than not they are, I thank them because I can't see myself the way others see me, and I have to improve if I'm going to get anywhere. The only way to do that is if I listen, and people out there are sharing this information. We have to listen. To bring it back to our topic for tonight and then turn it back over to the next speaker, the costs of illegal immigration go far beyond what the cost of criminals coming in or terrorists coming in might do. An American citizen or a legal American worker, generally speaking, somebody who wants to be here and wants to be an American, they don't generally really suck on the benefits. They don't get on that government tit. And this is, sorry, that's a proper term. And they don't take. They're actually trying to give.
After dark. Go ahead.
Well, no, it's T-E-A-T. That's how it's pronounced, and it's actually a legitimate term. All mammals have them, but that sucking for sustenance doesn't really happen as much with people who are really concerned about being good Americans. It does happen extraordinarily large amount with illegals. They get tax credits, they get welfare, they get food stamps, they get all kinds of benefits they should not be getting because unlike my unemployment office, which does vet and make sure that we don't pay out benefits unless you're legally supposed to be here, a lot of these agencies aren't permitted to do that. The workers want to do that, just like the Border Patrol isn't permitted to do their jobs. There's a lot of good workers for the government. I'm not saying they all are. There's a lot of lazy drones. There's a lot of corrupt people at higher levels. But the vast majority of the workers don't get paid a lot. They work really hard, and they're frustrated too. The people in my office, people in all the offices that I know across the state and the counties, because I know people in private industry, self-employed people, and I know people work for government. I work for government. Most of us are frustrated as hell. We can't stand the fact that our bosses won't let us do our jobs properly. And they, you know, a law comes out, we read the law, we understand the law, we know what we're supposed to do, we wait for the regulation. It takes them a year and a half to write a simple two-line regulation that goes with the law. Now we got a regulation. We got to have training. They can't get that right. We've got to implement it. They can't get that right. It takes a month after month after month. Finally, they get it kind of right according to what the legislature passed and the governor signed, and we're doing it. And this isn't a criticism of the unemployment system alone or labor and industry. It extends to every facet of government and the biggest of big business across the country, at every municipality, every state. The federal government by far can't do anything efficiently. And the reason is they don't want us to do it efficiently. For every dollar that gets soaked in by, you know, taken from workers, taken from small businesses, for a specific purpose, 10 cents of it goes to that purpose. The rest of it is wasted, and the majority of the waste goes, I would say, the remaining 90%, and this is just my own personal estimate, I would say that a good 30% of it is just soaked up by administrative bureaucracy, people stamping things and passing it along to somebody else to stamp and passing it along to somebody else to stamp. A waste of time, most of it. And of the remaining 60%, 20% of it is wasted on a surplus of top-level officials who get paid top-level salaries and top-level pensions and top-level benefits for doing bottom-level work. Most of them could be eliminated. Most of the positions could be eliminated. And then of the remaining 40% of the money that's taken in, that $1, that 40 cents is stolen. It's stolen by people who learn how to work the system. If you make a system up, people will abuse it. They've made a system for immigration, and they've set it up in such a way over the years since the 68 Reform Act that was Ted Kennedy's gift to the world. That and Chappaquiddick were the two big things he did that year. But they've set it up to basically turn America away from what we were, and they had to do it gradual. Their biggest mistake, and the reason why they're ramping things up right now in a big way, why we're all so outraged, is because they figured that by now there'd be no patriots left. They figured that nobody having a bad education from public schools would be able to think or have read anything. That with the mainstream media completely co-opted, nobody would have any information that was actually accurate. And they figured because they were getting away with it all these years that they'd just get away with it. And they had planned to not do what Obama's doing right now. They had planned another half a generation or so of the slow gradual, and the next thing you know, happy utopia where they're the kings, we're the peons, we accept it, we don't know any better, and they rule everything. But what happened along the way was that there are still enough Americans, enough people who were raised with good values, who managed to get a good education, whether it was through a subversive teacher who actually told them the truth, or they pay attention to their local municipalities, their local news, and they actually learn something, people who share on the Internet, people who are religious. And I'm not particularly religious, but I have to acknowledge that, you know, that is a major source of American values. And there's enough of us left that they saw that, geez, these people are winning. In 2010, they kicked a whole bunch of us out. We kicked a lot of Democrats and Republicans out who weren't doing their jobs right. And, of course, a lot of the people that got in got co-opted, corrupted. And we had 2012 yep. wasn't quite as good. 2014, we shall see. It's turning out to be a very interesting year so far. But they're ramping it up because they realize it's a race. They kind of have to use force now. They kind of have to they don't have any choice. If they go back to the gradual and, well, we'll just tweak this law and we'll just push it a little bit further, we'll just turn the heat up on that frog just a little bit more, they're going to lose, and they know it. So they're pushing for the end game as fast as they can. And the genius for that, the wonderful thing for that, the thank you for that, is the fact that the more they push, the more we push back, and the more people wake up. There's an awful lot of people who are unsophisticated. They're not stupid. They didn't get a good education. They don't get good news. But when it hits their own lives, when they start hurting, when all their friends and family start hurting, when they see the cognitive dissonance between this is what they're telling me all the time, but this is what I see all the time. It's just not true. They start looking around for answers, and what do they find? They find ordinary citizens, people like me and Holly, you know, people like Althea and James, regular folks who've just stepped a little bit ahead of the we're just a little bit ahead, and they say, well, what's going on? And we tell them, they go, well, I don't know if I should trust you, but let me check it out. And they do for the first time in their lives, they start checking things out themselves, and they go, wow, that guy told me the truth. What else has he got to say? And they check that out, and that's true. And they say, well, all right, so what you're saying is true, but what can we do about it? And then someone like James or Paul Arnold says, well, why don't you do this? It's real easy. Here's make a little sign. Go stand out there. Here's the schedule. Here's where it's going to be. And you meet some nice folks, and you can do something. And they go, wow, I had a great experience. What else can I do? And they start doing more, and they start getting more efficient. They start getting more radicalized. The next step is they start being the source of information. Their neighbor, their friend, their coworker, their person who they know from wherever says, gee, I don't know what's going on here. These people keep telling me stuff, and it doesn't match my experience. And that person who was brand new to this just months ago says, well, let me tell you what's actually happening. And since they learned it so freshly, so recently, it's real fresh and recent and sincere with them. Folks, I've been aware of this stuff for a long time, but I'm guilty too. It was only in the last – my wife and I sat down tonight. It's just about 3 years, just coming up on 3 years since I decided I had to take my light and stop hiding it under a bushel and to go out there and start doing stuff. And the first year, oh, my God, did I make a lot of mistakes, and really it wasn't that successful. And the second year really took off. And I don't know what's happening this third year. I'm that tired. I'm just going with the flow. But, you know, you say, I see these folks out there. They're so prominent. They're leaders. I could never do that. Well, maybe you could. Well, you don't know. I didn't know. And I'm not sure where it's going to take me, and I'm not sure where it's going to take you. Maybe you're going to be leading in some way. Maybe you're going to influence somebody. Maybe you're that person standing up there on the overpass who only recently woke up 6 months ago, who only really, really got a grasp on this stuff 3 months ago, who only started being active 2 months ago, who's now, you know, kind of organizing things for your little group a little bit. You know, your 10 people, 15 people are showing up to hold up some signs and some flags and maybe, you know, pass some messages along, go outside a congressman's office and protest. And somebody comes along, some young folk perhaps, some nice young man or woman, and they say, what's this all about? And you tell them. And they walk away, and you may not even remember that event. And that person could be the next statesman that we need. They could be that George Washington, and you woke them up. So that's how important this is.
Yep, so true.
Very well said, as always, Dan.
Thank you. Well,
and
dead air is not a good thing.
His thoughts. See, got everyone thinking, Dan, so everyone's quiet and just kind of letting that sink in. And it's definitely something you bring to the table on a weekly basis, and I definitely appreciate that. So I do see,
you know,
that
Bob,
we have
let me just say one thing real quick. That's been happening a lot lately. And, you know, where I'll say stuff, and I've got some notes here I wrote down as I'm going along. Not much preparation except for just all the time I'm studying, and I'll start talking. And I kind of get inspired or something. And the thing that's been happening lately is I'll stop talking, and it's something I don't see a lot where it just gets quiet. Quite frankly, this is very disconcerting, and it's got me worried.
That means it's like E.F. Hutton. They're listening. Gosh, I haven't seen one of those commercials in a long time. Of course, I don't watch a lot of TV, but
I remember those commercials.
Yeah, where that somebody would say
but
E.F.
But
no,
that actually
like
really did.
Or
that it, Dan, that is happening all over, and it happened, the event I hosted here in Oklahoma, we had several passerbyers stop and say, hey, what's going on? And we just passed on the information. And like you said, you just inform them. And that's the great thing about it is we are getting the awareness out there. It is snowballing, and it is making a difference. So that's the wonderful thing about it.
Yes, certainly. And for, you know, for me, I mean, you know, when I was younger, I used to think, you know, I was always a Republican, always conservative, but I always thought that, you know, I guess the face of the nation was based in the Republican Party. And I mean, even when I was a kid, I don't know how many folks remember Family Ties and Michael J. Fox played Alex Keaton. You know, my friends and family used to joke around, you know, and call me Alex Keaton when I was a kid. You know, just the way it was with politics in the Republican Party. And I thought, you know, it's within that party that's going to, you know, keep this nation and then closer to 2012, you know, make this nation right. But, man, after you know, from 2012 onward, I really lost a lot of faith in the Republican Party and start looking outward towards, you know, other parties such as the Constitution Party, Libertarian. You know, things of that nature. Yeah, for me, especially the Constitution Party. You know, and we've had some folks in the Green Party as well. But, more, you know, more of the grassroots, not necessarily part of the duopoly. And I do really like the Irish style of politics where they have multi-party systems. I think that might be more something that'd be better representation for the citizens of this country as well.
That's a good point.
Well, it is interesting, but I'm just amazed at our founding fathers and their wisdom that I believe came from God. So I'm sticking with that.
I want people to remember one thing about our founding fathers is that they were brave. They put it all on the line. They weren't just rich folks. They were from a lot of different successful walks of life, but they were messed up jerks too. Just like you and me. There were a lot of them who had happy families, and some of them couldn't keep it together. There were a lot of them who had successful businesses, and some of them were bankrupts. There were a mix of people. And if you read their writings, the first things that you'll find if you like read the Federalist Papers and things like that is the good stuff. But if you go further, if you want to be a scholar, you can do it. We don't have Kelly on tonight, which is a shame because I'm sure he's read this stuff. They said some pretty whacked stuff. I mean, some of them said, and Franklin is an exception. He was a really good writer. He never said anything he didn't think about first and say in a really, really good way. But most of the rest of them really said some stupid things at times. But the good stuff is what lasts. You know, people who talk about music, just to bring it to a different topic, just as an analogy, they say, well, I like this type of music or that type of music. And I say, why do you like a type of music? It's like liking a type of politician or a political party. I said, there's only two kinds of music. I'm a musician. There's good music and there's bad music. And it's true. And
it is
and
true.
You know what great music is? And I've never heard anyone say this, but I'm sure it's not original with me. Great music is music that works in different genres. One of the reasons why the Beatles were so successful is because they wrote great music. And the proof of that is you take most of their songs and you play them as classical music, bluegrass music, blues music, country music, hip-hop music. It still works because it's great music. Well, it's the same with ideas. Ideas translate across lines. Then folks will say, well, you know, those guys back then, they really had it together. They knew what they were doing. And I, you know, I'm not going to sit there and say, well, yeah, no, if you go to this website with this obscure historical stuff, I can point you to some really hard to read stuff that you need footnotes to understand what they're talking about that shows it's not true. It's easier to use another analogy. If you look at movies or music of the past, there is music that we still play today, and there's movies that we still watch over and over and over again today from the past. Does that mean that only good music and movies happened in the past? I got news for you, folks. It ain't the case. If you're anything above teenage years, you have some experience, and you recall the music you listened to. You remember that really good stuff? Remember that really awful stuff they were playing on the radio at the same time, or it was in the theaters at the same time? Well, that really awful stuff isn't going to last. Back in 1939, that was the best year for movies out of Hollywood in the history of Hollywood. They had Gone with the Wind. They had The Wizard of Oz. They had, oh, my God, so many great, amazing movies. It was like every single one of those that was nominated for an Academy Award should have won every Academy Award, and there were dozens that weren't even nominated because there wasn't enough room. Amazing year. On the other hand, even that year, there was a lot of real crap produced. The crap didn't last. So when you look around today and you listen to all this stuff, remember, most of it is crap. I'll tell you a little story. Mark Twain, who was an amazing wit, always on his toes. He's now in the latter part of his life. It's about 100 years ago, a little bit more. He's in New York City at a fancy swank party. He's dressed in his white outfit that you've probably seen pictures of him. And here's this guy. He's the Lion of American Letters. He's rich. He's world famous, okay? And he's drinking and smoking cigars. And some guy stumbles up to him and says, "Sir," in a really loud voice, "99% of everything you write is crap." And the whole place gets quiet. They're like, oh, no, you just insulted the wrong person. And they're eagerly waiting for what Mark Twain is going to say. And he knows he's got an audience, so he doesn't say anything for a bit. He lets that silence just sit there. And he takes a really deep drag of his big cigar, and he blows the smoke in the guy's face and said, "Sir, 99% of everything is crap." Well, so what? The point is, so what? So 99% of our politicians will fail us, and 99% of our ideas will fail us, and 99% of everything is crap. Does it matter? 1% is sheer genius. 1% is the best stuff that you'll ever have, and improves everything. 1% is more than enough, and we've got more than 3% of this country already.
What's that noise?
I don't know. It's not noise.
Yeah, we got some noise going on here.
Hey, is that the NSA again?
I was getting a refill and grabbing some ice. So I was getting thirsty.
Oh.
That was awesome,
okay.
James.
I was trying to be quiet.
Just for the record, though, Dan, I don't like the Beatles.
Oh, you don't have to.
For the record, I never did like The Wizard of Oz, and to me, Gone with the Wind is one of the worst movies ever put on film. But that's just me.
Well, all right, in terms of politics, since we only have a couple more minutes, are there any political movies or political songs that you think really, really are great, whether people recognize them as great or not? In, say, last 50 years, you know, since Kennedy.
Yes, let me play. I've got
Angry Americans
here.
Toby Keith.
Angry Americans.
I'm going to play a song which is a great political song. and Holly, I think you will. I mean, I think everyone will agree with it, but especially. Me and you, Holly, and the others, too. But let me play. It's only a 2-minute and 30-second song, but I think it's a great political song. And here we go.
If you want groceries in your basket, be with news. If you want food upon your table, be with news. If you want jobs, prosperity, be with news, be with news, be with news. If you are proud of America, be with news. If you think we're exceptional, be with news. We are a shining city on a hill. With news, be with news, be with news. If you want to win the future,
You know, Bob, I know you like, Newt Gingrich, but that is a really, really, like, barely passable folk song. And I'm speaking as a musician here. I'll tell you what I would say. Now, I like 7 Days in May. There's an awful lot of really great political stuff that went on. But this is the most influential song in the last 50 years that changed politics in America in a major way that has yet to be countered properly was for the other side. And there was a lot of protest music in the 60s, which the Patriot movement today, the Liberty movement, is actually co-opting because we're fighting a similar fight. We're using similar language. But the one song destroyed American family values, American sense of national sovereignty, American sense of religious tradition, American sense of all good things that make us America, was John Lennon's Imagine. A genius of a song.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, musically, it's a pretty good song. And when it's a pretty good song that sticks in your head, you start singing it to yourself. When you start singing it to yourself, those lyrics, you're saying them. You're brainwashing yourself over and over again. That song had a tremendous impact. I think it was a very negative impact. And we have to counter it. Now, I know you like Newt Gingrich, and I'll tell you, if he decides to run this time, you got to get a better song.
Got it. Well, someone, you know, I believe she was a, you know, an amateur song singer songwriter. You know, kind
of. I don't want her to feel bad
during the campaign.
I don't want her to feel bad. It was a nice effort, you know, it's got a nice beat. You can dance to it, as they used to say in American Bandstand. But it's not great music, no.
Well, I'll tell you what, the song that I start the show with every
song.
Night, you know, that I have it, that's actually from a Newt Gingrich campaign. Someone put some pictures together in an awesome slide. And actually, you can probably find it on YouTube somewhere, which that's where the song from the theme of the show came from.
That one really has a lot of impact.
Yeah. Yeah, and the video went great right along with the song too.
Yeah, I wish I had
some nights, especially like tonight when I I played the majority of it, because I think it's really really indicative of what we're trying to do here tonight.
Well, you know, there were songs that made a difference over the course of American history. Battle Hymn of the Republic, that one certainly was a marching song. There have been other songs, and you know, memes, as they call them today, and no one can really predict it. So if you're out there, there's another way, folks, that you can contribute. Let's say that you're a creative type. Now, I'm good at music. I'm not so good at visual stuff. I can't engineer anything, you know, for at all. I'm really no good at that. I need somebody who understands that technical stuff and is good at it. But if you can take pictures, if you can take video, if you can write, if you can make music, if you can put videos together from other people's stuff, that is a tremendous way to help. Maybe you're not going to, you know, organize an entire national event like Paul and James. Maybe you're not going to be able to audit the books of a township, or run for office, or be somebody's campaign manager. Okay, somebody else can do that. But if you've got that creative talent, we need you. Hollywood has the worst summer ever. Thank God for that, because they're all a bunch of statists and liars, mostly. Not all. There's some good ones in there. And they're having a bad summer, and pop music isn't doing all that well, because they're giving us stuff that they want us to have, not stuff that we want. They're not giving us the choices. The nice thing is that if you come up with a great video or a great piece of music, you pop it on YouTube, throw it up on the Internet. Go put it on my Facebook page or something like that. You won't be able to post it until I look at it, and because I got too many people want to do that, I have to actually be a little selective. And I guarantee you, I'll tell you what, I'll make you this deal right now. I've got a pretty good following of people who pay attention to what I'm doing. And if you come up with something that is really catchy, really good, and it's got a good message about constitutional liberty in any of the regards, as long as there's nothing in it that's really nasty and objectionable, I will be more than happy to promote it as hard as I can and let everybody I know make their minds up about it, and maybe that'll be the next viral thing.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. That'd be interesting to see. And James, we haven't heard from you for a bit, so I'm going to go ahead and bring you back into it.
Well, I just, you know what Dan was saying earlier about, you know, maybe that one person will, you know, that we talked to, man, to becoming the next great statesman. And that's really, that's one of the points of the reasons we're out there, is because, you know, all it takes is that right spark at the right time, when that person is just in that right frame of mind. You know, we communicate out to just millions of people all the time whenever we're out there. And who knows what sparks we've set off in people's minds when they see us out there. You know, I do know, due to the fact that we got so much press coverage, that there were a lot of sparks in people's minds, whether it be positive or negative. You know, and most of the media was positive, much to my surprise. You know, they did cover both sides and took a sympathetic tone with the illegals for a large part. But, you know, that's because that's what they've been conditioned to do. And so I really, that wasn't anything I wasn't expecting. But the thing is if we sparked ideas in people's minds that day, and it sparked, I think, what is going to be a big backlash against these amnesty politicians. And you know, we'll see. You know, I do think that it struck a very strong blow against this amnesty movement here in America, because it was the first time that Americans stood up together all across the country to say they were against that. And you know, and the same thing, you know, with our Impeach Obama campaign. You know, before we started, nobody would even, you know, nobody of any note would even say it. Now you've got even, you know, Sarah Palin out there preaching, saying that they need to impeach him. And, you know, I know, you know, a lot like her. I personally don't think that she would be a good choice for, you know, for president. I think she might be good at some place in a cabinet position. But, you know, that's my personal opinion. And, you know, who knows, I could be wrong. I've been wrong before. And so, you know, any Sarah Palin fans out there, you know, don't hate me. It's just my opinion, you know. You know, but the fact is that, you know, one thing you can't deny about Sarah Palin is, you know, that woman really loves America. Whatever else you can say about her, that woman loves America. And, you know, and hopefully with her saying that now, and, you know, even some of the people, you know, as far as, you know, radio pundits have started saying it now. And so it's an idea that's infecting the nation, and you know, that's really what you have to do. You have to get that idea out there, and you have to keep saying it, and you keep saying it, and you keep saying it. In a way, it's almost a reverse. And I believe it was Goebbels that said it. You know, it's often attributed to Adolf Hitler. If you tell a lie often enough, eventually people will believe it. Well, if you tell the truth often enough, eventually people will believe that. And, you know, because they've been lied to so much, they think the lie is the truth. But if you keep, if you keep telling them the truth, eventually they'll see the truth for what it is. And the beauty about doing something like that, is once they see that a person has lied to them once, then you've planted that seed of doubt into everything else that person has said. And that's really, that's what has to happen. It's planting a seed and watching the plant grow. And what we're watching right now is there's a big plant growing to, you know, that you could call the impeachment movement, because it's taken on a life of its own. A lot of groups, of course, out there that haven't had anything to do with it are now claiming all the credit for it. I don't even care. Honestly, I don't even care. If Joe the plumber got all the credit for getting Obama removed from, I couldn't care less. Couldn't possibly care less as long as it happens, you know. And if it happens, well, we're all better for that. And the country will be better for that. And, of course, you know, I actually ordered today, just because I want to see their rule book and their strategy book, I ordered today a copy of Rules for Radicals. I've never actually read that book, but my intent is to read that book and see exactly how their game plan is working. I've seen snippets of it, but what I want to do is, it worked well. I've got to give him some credit. His strategy has worked. Well, the beauty about that is just like Sun Tzu's Art of War, those same strategies can be applied the other direction. And that's exactly what I intend to do when I read that book. If you read Sun Tzu's Art of War, then you know how to properly conduct, a warfare on general principle. And the same thing can be done with that, because, strangely enough, here in 2014, we find that the radicals in America are the patriots. So, hey, let's use those rules for radicals, flip them around into patriotic mode, and use their own rules against them. And that's exactly what I intend to do. I'm actually looking forward to getting that book, because, you know, it's been used for such nefarious purposes over the last, originally published in 1971. And so now we're looking at 43 years since that book was originally written. And, we're seeing the effect of it now. So let's flip that rule book around on them and see what they like when they get a little taste of their own medicine.
Well, James,
I do want to get somebody on the line here. And we have Kelly. Thank you very much, Kelly, for calling
awesome.
To the show. What do you think about what James is proposing there?
Rules for Radicals, Saul Alinsky, the ends justifies the means, so they're going to commit corruption to get into power, and Obama has essentially blocked petitions to grand jury, so it's hard to hold them to account. That's another Rules for Radical technique, is make sure you don't get caught. That's interesting. I'm kind of all talked out in the sense of, I was putting my son to bed, I was kind of listening, but I did a hour and a half conference on the grand jury this weekend and held everybody's attention, and it was quite interesting, and questions afterwards, and I'm just talked out.
No problem.
So,
well, appreciate you calling me in and spending, you know, I've seen you on there listening for the for past time, and appreciate you coming in for a couple minutes before we have to start getting ready to close things out, because we literally have nine minutes.
That's all I can say.
Hi, Kelly.
Thanks.
Well,
as I said, we only got about 9 minutes left, so we'll
well, Robert,
if you got, go ahead.
All right. To just address the rules for radicals that James and Kelly were talking about, when you read this, James, keep in mind a couple of things. First of all, we're limited. We're handicapped because we cannot afford to not tell the truth, and that's part of the tenet of what they do. Also, what Rules for Radicals was designed to do was to take an unpopular set of ideas and foist them upon the American public gradually. It's not entirely applicable to what we're doing today. Some of the stuff that they're talking about definitely works, but the best use I've found for Rules for Radicals, and recall that I was a progressive and I used that book. I was, dyed in the wool, and I did all that stuff until my early 20s when I started to move incrementally away from it. If you master the progressive techniques of Delphi technique and Rules for Radicals and a lot of these other things, if you master it, they cannot beat you in debate. They cannot beat you when they're having, you're going to plan events. They cannot beat you when they're trying to use the press. They will stick to their game plan. That's one thing that they're very strong about. They have discipline. But it's also a great weakness because they don't have anything else. There's nothing else they can do. And the last thing that they can resort to is the truth, whereas that's the very first thing we start with, and we never have to vary from that position. If you're telling the truth, you never have to change your story. You don't have to couch it in any kind of facetious terms. You don't have to misrepresent it. It's the truth.
Well, and that,
Holly, I want to give real quick. I want to give Holly a few moments. She'd like to chime in before we move forward.
Well, the book that I need to read more than I do is the Bible, and I believe it says that the truth is like a double-edged sword. So it goes straight through. I wanted to ask James, I'm sorry, I'm just trying to help with the rallies. On the overpass event, there's one for the 6th and the 9th. Can we have a separate banner for the 9th for the against illegal immigration and amnesty? Can we have a separate banner for that to set up events with?
Yeah, I actually posted one in there. I've got it on my other computer up here at my laptop, but I posted them in there somewhere. But
the current banner is Extortion 17 and Defender Borders, No Amnesty. Can we just have asking if we can have a separate banner just for the No Amnesty?
Yeah, I made one. I'm not sure where it is there in the group.
Okay.
I'll find it as soon as I get. I'm in here in the quiet sanctum where my main computer is not, and therefore that file's not there.
Oh, that's fine. I just wanted to ask about that. That way, when I do go to try to set up a rally, we could go under that banner alone. That would be great.
Yeah, that's no problem. Yeah, actually, it's kind of squirrely. Facebook settings are messed up for their banners, and I had to tweak with it and tweak with it and tweak with it to finally get it to fit properly, because if you make them according to their size, what they say, it says it's too small, but then if you make it any larger, then it doesn't fit. So I had to actually do a little finagling to get that to actually work properly. But after a little perseverance, I was able to make that happen.
Perseverance. That's great. And we're all still learning. And I just want to thank you again, Robert, for the venue. And thanks for having me on. And, again, thank you to everyone out there for standing up. Again, this to me is a national security issue. And something's got to be done.
And I hope you enjoyed the Be With Newt song.
Oh, I did. Thank you for that. That was really great.
You're
I'll just
welcome.
Keep praying and keep going.
Well, folks, we've only got a couple minutes left, so I'll just each person, if they just wanted to spend a minute to give some closing comments, and I'll have to proceed to close out the show. And so we'll go over to you, James, and then you, Dan, and then if Kelly and Holly are spent, that's fine. We understand, and then we'll close things up.
Well, I just like to tell people just to get involved. You know, you may not be interested in politics, but politics is extraordinarily interested in you. It's interested in each and every one of us. If you don't do much, that's fine, but do something. The more, the better, of course, but do something. And if you can't do it for yourself, do it for your neighbor, or your father, or your mother, or your children, or your neighbor's children. But do something to make this nation a better place. That's real. All of it. If all of us did one positive action, that's 317 million positive actions, and this nation would prosper if we all would do that.
Thank you very much, James. We appreciate it. And definitely keep us posted on the future events there for Overpasses for America and for the protesting against amnesty and the border search. Go ahead, Dane.
Dan?
Oh, okay. On topic, I'd like to suggest to the overpass people or anybody who wants a really pithy little phrase, this one seems to resonate quite a bit. Legal or leave, just three words. And you can put one on top, the or in the middle, and then at the bottom, legal or leave. And this issue is about government that has overgrown itself. They've decided they're going to do what they want, whether we like it or not. We're showing them we don't like it, and they're not going to have the power to do that. We're turning it back. This year we're holding the line. And you watch, after 2014, getting ready for 2016, we're going to begin to take things back. We're going to begin to turn things around. And I'm not saying we're going to return to some mythical time when America was perfect. We're never going to be perfect, but we were a heck of a lot better than this in some ways, and we can be a lot better than we ever were. And I'm pleased to know that there's a new awakening going on across this country where people of all walks of life, from all backgrounds, are opening up their eyes, they're smelling the nastiness, and they're deciding that they can no longer just sit there and wring their hands and say, what can I do about it? Do something about it. James is right. And maybe you will come up with that next great idea, like overpasses for America. What an idea. How to force multiply, how to take a handful of people and influence tens of thousands every single time and make it grow. It's genius. It's a V8 moment. And maybe you've got you're new to this whole thing, and you look at it and you go, well, why don't we do this? And everybody goes, why the heck did we think of that? Because we need your ideas. Nobody in this whole movement has all the answers. And I'm listening to everybody it's taken all my time. I just don't know where that next idea is going to come from, and I don't assume it's going to come from top leadership. It's going to come from somebody who's brand new, who's looking at it, might be a kid, who says,
It's going to cut off. Yeah, it's going to cut off for you. It could happen. Not to, but I don't want you to be cut mid-sentence. Sorry about that, Dan.
Not at all, Bob.
Yeah, see, we got maybe a minute and a half of that. But, yeah, it's definitely with that. So, yes, sorry, Dan. I really apologize for that. But, yeah, so well, definitely, folks, share the link to the show and look forward to having Althea Shaw on next week. So listen for that, and we will see you then. And so I will end tonight, as I do every night, by thanking everyone for coming on, and we'll see you next week. And we'll end things with the song tonight, which I'm sure we'll only get about 30 seconds or so in. So take care, everyone, and have a good night, and we'll see you soon. Good night.
Thank you, Robert. Good night, everyone.
Good night.